Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, going to talk about wages. Actually, wages down, productivity through the roof. Something we've already known. We've seen this for the last 30 years, but the latest report since the Bush recession, we've seen, productivity go through the roof. Wages stagnant and actually declining. Again, not much surprise there. We're going to talk about that. Also, when the wealthy speak, the joy, the brilliance, especially when they think they're talking to themselves. I can't wait to talk about the Mackinac Center and their donors. Also, it's Nurses and Teacher Appreciation Week. You know, those people who destroyed the country, caused the collapse, caused the grand chaos, stealing money from us with those gilded pensions. Yes. Yes, it's those folks. Appreciation Week. And you know, the people who taught us to read and write and, you know, the people who took care of me when I was sick. Yeah, those evil people. To talk about that. Also, marijuana legalization. The bill has hit the General Assembly. Going to talk a little bit about that. And, of course, more fun with guns. Can't wait for that. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, questions, comments, whatever's on your mind. We will get to, before we get to all that, well, special guest, a new addition to the program for our grand tour, a month away, cannot wait for the People's Tour for America. I've got Pat LaMarche, who's come on board for this once-in-a-lifetime tour across the country. I cannot wait. I'm excited. I won't. My wife, my kids, all excited. And I hope you are, too, Pat. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm very excited, and thanks for having me tonight.
Yeah, I look at this as an opportunity to do so much.
And it really is an opportunity to let the people of the country have a voice when they, I don't know, are there too many Rick Smith shows around this country? Probably not. Probably not a place for people to get their thoughts, their spleen vented, as they say in New England.
Well, I mean, at the end of this, you know, for me, it comes back to the opportunity to teach my kids, and that's what this is about. It's about teaching my kids that, you know what, what's their spoon-fed, this belief that the robber barons of this generation of the past, that they created this great country of ours, to me is just fundamentally flawed. And I want to take them out on the road, and I want them to see the country and experience what this country is all about and meet the people, the genuine, honest, decent people of this country who built this country.
If you took some of the people that are taking credit for all the greatness of this country and actually gave them a laborer's job, I think you'd find it would be quite fascinating.
So you mean the Harvey Taylor Bridge we drove over? You mean Harvey wasn't out there pouring concrete? He wasn't hanging a couple hundred feet off the ground? He wasn't doing any of that?
It's just so amazing. I mean, we are going to some really great places, right? We're going to go see the Hoover Dam. And when you look at the Hoover Dam and realize how many people are buried there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we hear all the time about the Great Wall of China and the guys that died building that. Well, people have died building a lot of stuff that's important to us here in the United States. And there not only would there not be the electricity for 8, 10, 12 states, there wouldn't be any water for the Southwest if it weren't for the Hoover Dam, Lake Mead, and all the rest of it that it built. It's really going to be amazing. I'm looking forward to watching your kids see it.
Yeah, and that's, to me, the exciting part as well, because, you know, it's one thing to learn about something in a book. It's completely something different to get out and to experience things firsthand, which is, you know, when you talk about education or you talk about how we teach kids, to me, the best way to do that is hands-on by far.
I love those moments, too, where you've seen something that was 3 inches tall in your brain all your life because you saw it in a book. You know, like the pyramids, first time I ever saw the pyramids. You know, they're 3 inches tall. And then, holy cow, you know, you go over to Giza and there they are, and son of a gun, but those things are large. And you come around the corner and there's the Sphinx, and it's carved out of a mountain.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't even talk about laborers. You know, those laborers also buried at the feet of the pyramids and the things. So, you know, it will be wonderful to be wonderful to put a reality back to the hardworking people. And I think that's what's so cool about Elizabeth Warren right now.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren right now saying, you know what? How come the kids who go to college don't get the same lending rate as the big banks? They're a much better investment. Talk about too big to fail. Our youth? That ought to be too big to fail. And so that's the sort of thing. Those are the sort of little people that deserve our investment in the United States.
Well, I mean, you talk about education. We've got a legislator here in the state of Pennsylvania, Daryl Mad Cow Metcalf, who he thinks, you know,
is he contagious? Because I'm really afraid of Mad Cow.
He thinks that, you know, spending money on education, it's, well, here's Daryl himself. You know, You can't make this stuff
up. When you
give
money to the education establishment like this, it's like throwing it into a black hole.
Just throwing money into a black hole. Education.
Where's this guy? Can he read?
No, I don't think so.
Who taught him to read?
I don't think he's learned that.
Well, this is what's so amazing. It's like these people hatched or something. By the way, Brett says I can't have an egg anymore for my Twitter account.
No, no egg.
No egg, huh? Oh, God. Anyway, but I mean, these people, it's like, how did you get where you are? Think about that. Although, I've run for office and done some other strange things. And one time I was running for governor of the state of Maine, and I was on a boat with this guy who was running for U.S. Congress. He was a Republican running for U.S. Congress. And my mother had just died. I mean, literally like 10 days earlier. I couldn't grieve. I was running for governor. I'm talking to this man about his mother who's sick. She's been told, the whole family had a conference. They were told the mom's going to have to go on kidney dialysis for the foreseeable future. And so they all had a powwow, and they decided that that would take up every asset she had, and they all agreed that she should die. And I literally almost fell off of the boat. On it, you should see your face. Go to the website right now. Look at his face. They all agreed. This guy was running for United States Congress. They agreed that rather than have her assets go, her house would have to be sold. You know, this is the stuff she wanted to leave to her children. She decided, yes, absolutely, the most important thing she could do would be not to do that. I'm trying to control myself because I would have given anything if my mother had lived one more week. You know, and here, I couldn't believe my ears. The family decided.
Well, I guess, you know, at the end of this, I guess you can then make the, you know, the clear distinction of, you know, which side of this are you on? And you go back to the old labor saying, you know, which side are you on? They're clearly on the side of money and power and status and all of the things that we're clearly not.
Right.
You know, because, you know, much like you, another day with my mother would have been, you know, priceless.
Yeah. And so when you realize they're willing to let your mother die,
if they're willing to let their own mother die, what are they going to do to yours?
Right. And that is the important thing. Some of these people slip a disc and they're the I got mines. My mom can afford to live, so I really don't care what happens to your mom. Some of them are like that, but some of them literally believe that what has she worked for as far as her finances. And I can hear people's heads nodding up and down right now. Oh, yeah, what she worked for all her life, that shouldn't go to a doctor. You're right, because we should have universal health care.
Absolutely.
But that said, if there was a price to be paid to save your mother, you wouldn't pay it? Okay, tell you what, run for U.S. Congress and work for universal health care. You get to keep your mom's house, and you get to keep your mom. Win-win.
Oh, no. Because then those people would get health care.
In front of me. They're going to get in line in front of me. That's not the line I care about. It's whether or not I'm in the back of it. It's, you know, some dirty, unwashed part of humanity is going to get in line ahead of me.
Isn't that the argument?
It is.
Doesn't that say an awful lot about us?
You and me?
No, us as a society. I mean, the fact that you would have someone that would anyone even consider voting for who would think that way. But the sad reality is I look at our General Assembly here in Pennsylvania. I look at the House of Representatives on the national level, and there are a lot of those people that have got a lot of votes.
Boehner!
I think Boehner is just a... I think he's a wind blower.
Oh, yeah, but his wind is foul. He blows a foul wind.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah, that's got to stop. That's got to stop. And, you know, we've got to go and talk to the people in their districts and say, you know how you have an 8% approval rating of Congress and then you voted back your own guy? No, he's the one. And then go to the next congressional
district. You mean 80% disapproval?
8% approval.
Oh, 8%. Okay.
They have an 8% approval, and then they, you know, but they 80-something percent voted back in the same Congress.
Yeah, boy, that's the mentality. Congress sucks, but my guy's okay.
No, your guy sucks.
My guy really, really, Barlotta, really bad. Really, really bad.
But it is fascinating. I actually was at the State House 10 days ago or so with a couple of homeless kids. And the one right here in Harrisburg. And we were at a hearing. Wonderful. They're talking about doing a homeless caucus where, you know, sort of like the Black Caucus and the other important interest groups. I don't call them special because nobody really cares in the big scheme of things.
About homeless people and poor people, right.
Black people. Yeah, all those things. And so these people who are of a collection large enough that they could have possibly an extra voice, and I believe extra voices. I'm a fan of affirmative action. I can talk about all kinds of things I believe deserve an extra voice. But we were there, and one of the arguments being made was in the case of public assistance, that $205 a month just wouldn't go far enough, so why give it to someone anyway? And a homeless woman got up and testified that because she had Section 8 housing, she had to pay part of her rent.
Right.
So her part of her rent was $57. That came out of her $205. She also had to pay her copays on her prescriptions. So it came out of that. This was a senior citizen, a little old lady, a woman who had worked her whole life to probably for minimum wage or very, very small amount above it. And if you work all your life for minimum wage, guess what? Your Social Security check isn't very large. So she was getting public assistance, and it was $205 a month. And, oh, by the way, that is what has been cut.
The whole general assistance budget was just eviscerated by this governor.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, you know, he's been lauded as this great budget balancer, and he's balanced it off the people who've had the least amount of voice. You know, the homeless, the sick, the elderly, the children. You look at the $1 billion a year that they've cut from public education only to privatize and destroy.
And look what it's done to the jobless numbers. They've gone up.
But no, Pat. He's the more jobs governor. Did you see? He's
the more snow jobs governor.
He's the more jobs governor. In fact, more jobs than Wyoming.
There are only like 500,000 people in Wyoming.
More
jobs. And half of them are related to Dick Cheney. Who wants them to work?
He has single-handedly created in the last year 1,000 new jobs. And
wow.
That's more than one other state in the country, and that would be Wyoming.
Isn't that amazing? That's repulsive. This is Pennsylvania, for God's sake. This is wonderful. Ben Franklin, weeping. He's weeping. He's weeping over his post office. He's weeping. Fire department, everything. Ben Franklin, the guy with the key, the electricity. Franklin Institute. This is such a fabulous state.
Yeah, well, we've forgotten that because we didn't really learn the history there.
This is the state
we've let the right wing write the textbooks. Who you know, Phyllis Schlafly's in the Texas history books. You go, what the hell is she in the books for? And you've taken Thomas Jefferson out? Really? Did I miss something?
This is the state where Thomas Jefferson wouldn't bring his slaves for very long because Pennsylvania, if you had your state here for your slave here for 4 months, they freed him. Pennsylvania, just public eminent domain, took your slave and freed it. This is the heritage of Pennsylvania is so fabulous. Yeah.
Radicals taking my slaves. How dare they? See, now we don't have slaves anymore. We've learned. We learned ourselves.
We have minimum wage employees.
We got minimum wage part-time employees that we rent. So we don't actually have to own them anymore because then they have to take care of themselves.
But they can't. They can't.
That's not our problem. That's not our problem.
It is their problem. You know what? It is your problem if the person making your cheeseburger couldn't wash their hands this morning. That's a problem.
But didn't you see in the bathroom there's a sign that says you have to wash your hands?
It's a problem. Do you know what sign I saw yesterday at Penn Station?
Tell me.
It said, do not shave, wash, bathe, blah, 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 in the sink in the bathroom at Penn Station.
Look, you know, when I was driving a truck for a living, I would walk into the truck stop bathroom. And in fact, on Christmas Eve a couple years back, there was a guy literally standing in his underwear on his shoes bathing in the sink the day before Christmas because the company he worked for didn't give him enough money to put fuel in the truck so he could go home and didn't give him anything to do, held him there for a week with no pay, no fuel, nothing. He was sequestered there because, well, they could.
Right.
And I mean, this is the guy who's working.
Well, I used to be the vice president of Safe Harbor Homeless Shelter in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and more than half of the people that were in my shelter had a job. And by the way, more than a third of them were children.
Yeah,
so you're talking about 80-something percent, either children or working, in a homeless shelter. That's subsidy.
Seriously wrong with that.
That's subsidy to exploiters so that exploiting employers can have a slave labor force.
Sad stuff. Gotta take a quick break here. Back your thoughts, questions, comments, something on your mind. Pat, thanks for coming. Can't wait. I love more of this. Thanks so much. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Millions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in this country get not a dime to spare.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The International Brotherhood of Teamsters is warning Congress against allowing bigger, heavier trucks on the nation's highways. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says corporate greed is what's driving the trucking industry to push legislation that would put heavier and longer big rig trucks on the roads. Hoffa says there are safety issues, and heavier trucks will also put more wear and tear on already crumbling infrastructure. So the union is backing the Safe Highways and Infrastructure Act to prevent heavier, longer trucks on our roads. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says returning military veterans deserve better than the $8.81 an hour part-time Walmart jobs they've been offered. Trumka says President Obama and Vice President Biden have valorized Walmart's announcement of a plan to hire more discharged veterans. Trumka says veterans shouldn't be used as symbols to greenwash Walmart's eroding brand. Trumka says working people are already struggling against an epidemic of low-paying, low-benefit, part-time jobs, and the president should not have helped legitimize that trend. In New York City today, hundreds of members of the National Treasury Employees Union protested damaging sequestration budget cuts. The IRS employees protested unpaid furlough days in a rally at Federal Plaza in New York. Sequestration is causing the IRS to shut down all public operations on 5 days between May 24th and August 30th. An additional 2 days of unpaid furloughs could occur in August or September. NTEU workers say the unprecedented closings will result in an inability to assist taxpayers seeking help. A gateway for state workers with same-sex partners in Michigan to share health insurance will remain open. Jesse Russell reports.
Michigan will continue to provide health insurance for state workers who live with their same-sex partner. In 2011, the Civil Service Commission voted to include non-family members who live with state workers for more than a year on the state's health insurance plan. Republican Governor Rick Snyder has opposed that decision, arguing that it conflicts with the state's gay marriage ban. An Ingham County judge disagreed and upheld the commission's decision. That ruling was similarly upheld by an appeals court. Republican Attorney General Bill Shute sought to have the Supreme Court overturn the decision, but the court refused to hear the case. According to the Associated Press, there are currently 124 state employees with live-in partners covered by the insurance plan. Michigan voters banned gay marriage in the state in 2004.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting support from the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Maybe working overtime, but if the Republicans have their way, you won't get paid for it. I look at that, the Workplace Flexibility Act. You gotta love the language they use. We're gonna give the employer the flexibility not to pay you overtime. And yeah, well, sometime down in the future, yeah, you may get comp time, maybe. Geez, drives me nuts. There you go. I heard Mike Terzak, voter ID done, and again, not so much done, but today a panel of three judges at the U.S. The Pennsylvania court upheld the redistricting, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court upheld the legislative redistricting plan. Here to talk to us a little bit about that is our good friend, Attorney Erwin Harrison. Erwin, thanks for taking time for me.
Good to be here. How are you?
I don't know. I look at this and I see this as, the Rorschach test of a gerrymandered map that we have now, I guess, upheld, right?
Well, that's what it is. A long time ago, former U.S. Supreme Court Justice William Brennan noted that in the context of the United States Supreme Court, but it's equally applicable to the state Supreme Court here in Pennsylvania, they're not final because they're infallible, but they certainly are infallible because they're final. And today, after really torturing over the legislative redistricting plan that was put forth by the General Assembly after the Pennsylvania Supreme Court had rejected an earlier very partisan and determined to be unconstitutional redistricting plan, did indeed affirm unanimously the redistricting plan. And understand, and it's important that our listeners understand that That is not the Supreme Court saying that they like the plan or that they agree with the plan or that they think it's the best plan. It is the Supreme Court saying that based on the unique constitutional standards that they must apply in measuring the validity of this plan as a matter of law, they didn't find anything that was repugnant to the constitutional process required of the legislature in adopting a redistricting plan.
So basically, we're going to get this gerrymandered plan that's going to make the House pretty much a Republican House for the next decade.
Well, that's precisely the result, and there are alternatives, but in our state government, unless and until we have a constitutional change, there are no alternatives to this highly partisan approach. Other states like California, for example, some years ago, adopted a reform plan where they have an independent redistricting and reapportionment commission that is not partisan and that is charged with the responsibility of coming up with contiguous, compact, relatively equal population districts for their legislative, state senate, and United States congressional seats. And the politics have been taken out of it, and in all honesty and in all candor, in this whole idea of reapportionment and redistricting, there shouldn't be any politics because this is not a function and should not be a function of how a political party in a very partisan way gets and retains power, but should be a function of how we the people are represented. And if this is to change, it will not change because we hope it will or because we are counting on a court to substitute its judgment for the constitutionally, procedurally correct judgment of the General Assembly. There needs to be a more fundamental and basic change, a change that really does away with the idea of partisan redistricting and replaces it with constitutionally protected, non-political, apolitical redistricting.
So move to a system like in California, or just have that woman from Allentown do it.
Yeah.
Because exactly. I think the woman from Allentown did a much better job, and as taxpayers, we didn't have to pay her quite as much.
No, absolutely not. And part of this, of course, depends on how you measure what is a good job. Some of us believe that a good job is having legislative and Senate districts and congressional districts that are not politically predetermined in terms of their outcome for any political party, but instead are truly competitive and are aimed at assuring that the people in each of those districts are represented. Others think a good job is getting away with feathering your own nest.
Yeah, and that's what this has turned into. It's sad stuff. And all, you know, another court decision that just came down, I guess it was yesterday in the U.S. Court of Appeals in D.C., a three-judge panel struck down the NLRB's, the National Labor Relations Board's, regulation that in workplaces there had to be just a simple poster that said, you know what, you working people, you have the right to collectively bargain and you have some rights.
Well, understand that court, which was a three-judge panel, all appointees of George W. Bush, one senior judge and two active judges, determined that a required posting that not only said, hey, workers, you have a right to join a union, but it also was required to say you have a right not to, that somehow was a violation of the free speech of the National Manufacturers Association members and the National Federation of Independent Business members, who said that their right to free speech included a right not to speak.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. Since this has been struck down, when will we see the minimum wage posters come down and the anti-discrimination poster? When will we see all that other stuff? Because if one comes down, don't the rest of them infringe on that corporate free speech?
Well, there indeed is the question, and those cases have not been litigated yet, but the D.C. Circuit has become the poster child for politically motivated, results-oriented judicial decisions. This is exactly the same court that 6-8 weeks ago in a case called Noel Canning said that President Obama's constitutionally provided for appointment of members of the National Labor Relations Board had to be set aside and stricken, and therefore every ruling of the National Labor Relations Board during the terms of those appointees was invalid. And this is just nuts. I mean, that case overturned every presidential recess appointment going back to 1789.
Ah, victory. Victory for the employee.
I'm sorry, 1787.
Victory for the ruling class. Yay.
So,
why should those workers have rights, Irwin?
Well, setting aside that most basic of questions of why should workers have rights, I would think that employers and workers alike not only have an interest in, but should have a desire that there be some predictability, some rationality in the day-to-day operations of their relationship. But this set it all on its head. That Noel Canning case sets it all on its head. Yesterday's decision in National Manufacturers Association versus NLRB that we were just talking about a minute ago, again, sets things on its head.
So,
and unfortunately, my brothers in the management side labor bar are refusing to join with us in encouraging the United States Senate to confirm President Obama's 5 appointees of a chair and 4 members of the National Labor Relations Board, which includes not only 3 Democrats, but 2 Republicans. And we have been working over the last several weeks to try to encourage our management side labor lawyer practitioner counterparts to join with us in sending a joint letter to the members of the United States Senate asking them to rapidly confirm the labor board members so that everybody in the system has some capacity to predict and understand what's going to happen and that cases can move along sprightly. But apparently the business community and the lawyers that represent them in this area have chosen a path to chaos, that they like chaos.
Well,
they like the Wild West.
Well, because they have control and that's what they like.
Well, last time I checked, they didn't win the election, but they have control anyway, and therein lies a problem. This is a tyranny of the minority, and that is the most troublesome of all.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and looking at this, though, you know, now the courts ruled, well, you don't have the right to know that you have this right to join a union or not to in either side. And so workers don't have rights. And I guess consumers and citizens really don't have rights either. And I guess yesterday you attended a Senate Judiciary Committee public hearing on, you know, people having a right to it. I mean, we have a right to a lawyer at a criminal trial, but nothing in civil litigation or civil instances. What happened there?
Yes, indeed. And hats off, by the way, to Pennsylvania State Senator and Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Stuart Greenleaf, Republican of Bucks County, for bringing this hearing to the fore. Everybody who watches TV and sees one of the cop shows, one of the lawyer shows, always sees people being arrested and somebody giving them what are known as the Miranda warnings. They're Miranda rights. They have a right to remain silent. And then you say can be held against you in a court of law. And you have a right to a lawyer, and if you can't afford one, one will be provided. Well, that notion of a right to a lawyer in criminal matters is relatively young. It was decided in the mid-1960s by the Warren Court, the court under Chief Justice Earl Warren, and we just celebrated its 50th anniversary. The case is called Gideon versus Wainwright. And in Gideon, the Supreme Court, in interpreting our Constitution, determined for the very first time, not in 1864 or 1863, not in 1787, but all the way forward in 1963, actually, that the right to counsel guaranteed by the Constitution in criminal matters meant that if you couldn't afford a lawyer, that we had to appoint one for you because you are presumed innocent until proven guilty, and because in order to have a right to counsel, you have a right to, you must have a right to have access to counsel. So we finally established that for criminal matters only 50 years ago in the 1960s, but we never touched it in civil matters. So when people's houses are at risk, when people are at risk of being evicted or having their mortgage foreclosed on, when people are losing custodial rights with respect to their children, if they can't afford to have a lawyer,
they're screwed.
They're screwed. Just like that. You said it exactly correctly. So yesterday's hearing was an investigation into access to legal services for the poor, for the indigent, on the civil side of things. And shockingly, what we learned in that hearing is that something in excess of 80% of the people who need a civil lawyer don't know and don't have access to one at all. And of the 20% who do know of their access and eligibility for legal services through legal aid societies in our communities, fully half of them are rejected for one reason or another, predominantly because these legal aid networks are so dramatically underfunded.
So where do you see this going? I mean, is there going to be legislation that will help with this? Where do
there are a number of things that are taking place. One is that the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, under the direction and leadership of Chief Justice Ron Castile, has really focused on the idea of funding legal services. So in Pennsylvania, we have something called the IOLTA Board, the Interest on Lawyer Trust Accounts Board, that it was established initially by the court and ultimately through legislation that requires all lawyers in Pennsylvania, when they are holding client funds, to put them in a special regulated account. And any interest earnings on those accounts must be earmarked not for any purpose other than to pay for legal services for the poor. Justice Castile and the associate justices have also imposed in the last 2 years a rule that requires that every lawyer annually, when paying to register their licenses to practice law, pay an extra $35 fee each year to fund an additional amount of money for the IOLTA Board, the Interest on Lawyer Trust Account Board. And the IOLTA Board makes distributions of these funds throughout the state. I happen to sit on the IOLTA Board. I'm a relatively new member of that board. I was appointed by the Supreme Court a few months ago. And another piece of this function is that many of us who are focused on assuring the rights of poor people, of indigent people, to have access to civil justice and not exclusively criminal justice representation, are talking about a concept that we have begun to refer to as civil Gideon. I mentioned Gideon versus Wainwright a few minutes ago. Civil Gideon would be the notion of people having a right to counsel in civil matters, at least those that are serious and can result in
losing your
elimination or denial of shelter, of housing, of food, of parental rights, of
unemployment.
Employment and unemployment and workers' compensation and Fair Labor Standards Act access for things like minimum wage and maximum hour and child labor, and also things like protection from abuse and spousal abuse and things of that nature, deviant sexual conduct.
So much stuff that we absolutely need. I'm with you. How do we push that? How do we push it along?
Well, one of the ways we push it along is like through the hearing that the Senate Judiciary Committee and Senator Greenleaf conducted yesterday, by bringing this to public attention. People don't generally know or understand that that TV shot of the perp walk of somebody being told that they have a right to counsel doesn't apply to everybody, and indeed doesn't apply to most situations that regular people face. Most people are not criminals, and most people do not engage in criminal conduct.
Right.
So people, unfortunately, by television, by radio, by other media sources, have become accustomed to a belief that's just unfortunately wrong, that everybody has a right to a lawyer for everything, and they don't. Okay,
good.
I do live in a country that says I have a limited right to counsel, which is intriguing because when I read those founding documents that I talk about so much on this show, I remember with clarity that we're told that we're entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which should mean I have a right to a doctor, and somehow I don't. And I do have a right to a lawyer, but that right is limited as well, and we need to focus on that. When people are faced with a termination of their public utilities, when folks who are disabled have to fight Medicaid and Medicare to get access to a wheelchair, these are basic life rights, and we need to have them have access to competent and trained counsel. And I marvel at my colleagues who work in the legal services world, and I work with them a lot in many ways. I marvel at their fortitude because they're dramatically underpaid, extraordinarily overworked, and everything that they see is pain. There is precious little joy on a day-to-day basis in what they do, except to the degree that they achieve some victories for people who are otherwise being victimized by the system.
Yeah, well, I hope to hear more about this in the coming weeks because I think this is important, and I'm glad you're on. I'm glad you're on this.
Well, I'm pleased to be on it. I hope that we can make a difference. But I'm really pleased that you're asking about it because it is another issue that is critical and about which I at least am rather passionate.
Well, I look forward to more in the coming weeks, Irwin. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. Thanks so much. Quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Stick around.
Rick Smith.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hide and seek can be a fun game for kids, but when huge corporations play it in our elections, fun becomes infuriating. Last year, corporate interests sought to elect their candidates by hiding from voters. In all, $352 million in dark money was spent, the bulk of it by corporations that secretly pumped it into trade associations, social welfare charities, and other front groups run by the likes of Karl Rove, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and the Koch brothers. Since surreptitious electioneering puts a fatal curse on democracy, there's now a push in the Securities and Exchange Commission for a rule requiring corporate executives to reveal to their owners, i.e. their shareholders, any political donations they make with company money. How sensible. But this simple proposal has caused a fury among those who profit by playing political hide-and-seek from voters. CEOs of the 200 largest corporations are being rallied to the barricades to stop it, and House Republicans are even trying to make it illegal for the SEC to let shareholders and the voting public know which campaigns are being backed by cash from which corporations. Their rabid panic over a little sunlight reveals just how powerful dark money is. Ironically, the Supreme Court's chief assumption in allowing unlimited corporate cash into our democratic process was that shareholders would be informed, involved, and provide public accountability for their company's political spending. This is Jim Hightower saying, even Justice Antonin Scalia, a cheerleader for corporate politicking, is no fan of hiding one's electioneering efforts from voters. Requiring people to stand up in public for their political acts fosters civic courage, he says. A campaign hidden from public scrutiny, Scalia writes, is anathema to self-governance. He adds that campaigning anonymously, quote, does not resemble the home of the brave.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again. Because God is a Republican.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app. Take the program on the go. Our stat of the day comes from the folks over at the Too Much Online blog. Points out that of the world's 34 major industrial nations, Denmark last year had the highest top marginal tax rate of 60.2% on incomes over $55,000. You want to hear Republicans lose their mind and a good number of Democrats? Try and propose the idea that, you know what, the well-to-do should pay a little bit more so that we could have roads and bridges and education and maybe you know, just a little health care, a little security in our old age. Just a thought.
We wouldn't pay more to have health care.
But even if we
pay less to have health care.
Well,
we pay the most and we have the least health care.
There are so many things that we could be investing in. And I look at this report from the ILO, the International Labor Organization, who points out that since the Grand Recession, you have seen productivity go through the roof, and, of course, wages have been stagnant. In fact, they say that the number globally, productivity has risen by 85% since 1980, and hourly compensation has only risen 35%. And you look at Germany, you say, well, you know, Germany's the economy of the Eurozone. They're the great success story. Well, their productivity has gone up over 22%. Wages flatline. So somebody's pocketing that money.
Yeah.
And where is that money going? Well, you know, I love the fact that wealthy people love to speak to each other and themselves. And I see one of our listeners sent me an interview with these folks, Jackie and Clarice Engelhardt. They're big donors to the Tea Party think tank in Michigan, the Mackinac Center. For those of you who listen to the program long enough, know that the Tea Party think tank here in Harrisburg, the Commonwealth Foundation, the guy who runs that, he came from the Mackinac Center, this whole little incestuous right-wing pooling group that goes on. Well, Mr. Engelhardt, he founded the Quality Pool Supply Company. And when asked by the Mackinac Center, why did pools get so popular in Michigan? Why? Why did in 1968 when you started your company, why? Why did things go so well for you, Mr. Engelhardt? He says, quote, at a time there are quite a few pools going in because General Motors, because of the union, had a high wage rate and a lot of them were working a lot of overtime, and they didn't have time to go on vacation. So they decided to put a pool in their backyard because the income was relatively high. It was a vacation in their own backyards. We fill the need and in a very expensive way to go. So he's saying,
he's saying what's absolutely true. If you put the money in the hands of the people spend it. The thing is, they don't care about the money being in the hands of the United States people anymore because the new markets are India and China. And they're going to turn every poor slob in the United States into a poor working slob that will support an economy that will be exported to the countries of India and China, the exactly. new economy.
But here's the thing. Go later into his interview, mm-hmm. and this is the part that gets me. Okay, he realizes that those union guys who had decent wages, who could have had a little disposable income, could buy these pools. They asked, you know, this guy, why do you value the Mackinac Center? And he says, well, it's a tremendous resource to educate citizens. You don't want to learn about the state, blah, blah, blah. His wife chimes in, says, well, I think it's a good education because it studies what's going on and things that will make things better. She goes, I think of right to work. And all those people who are forced to join unions. Understand, the Michigan economy is falling. Yeah. People aren't buying pools. And I read this, and I explain to me exactly why in the hell you're funding this group that's destroying your business. Because you've admitted it's because of those union wages. It's because those guys had disposable income that put pools in the ground that you exist.
Stockholm Syndrome. It's Malcolm.
Thank you.
People identify with their abuser. They're now embracing the verbiage of their abuser, and you know these are the new Patty Hearsts. They're gonna take the euphemistic machine gun to the people who can afford to buy their product.
So the Tea Party think tank asked the question: last year you gave your largest gift to the Mackinac Center. What prompted that? And he said that the guy who runs it, the current Matt Briette of our Tea Party think tank, the guy there said, well, you know, I was worried, I was stressed about making payroll. Didn't have enough billionaire money to make payroll, so I was a little stressed. So you know what Mr. Engelhardt does? Writes the biggest check ever, puts it in a pill bottle and says, here's your sleeping pill. And I got to be honest. There's part of me that goes, this is how they view medicine. This is how they view all of this. My head about explode when I read this. Because you can't make this stuff up. I mean, it's like the guy who shot the 47% video when Romney was speaking during the campaign and being candid and honest. This is how they talk to each other.
Absolutely. The makers versus the takers. And people actually think a guy who straps his dog to the roof of his car is bright enough. not to get around the corner. To go from Boston to Toronto, which aren't near each other. First of all, they're in separate countries. And second of all, they're not even like in near parts of the two countries.
But it shows that he's the decider. He made a decision and he stuck with it.
All the way until the kid said, Dad, the dog's puking down the side of the car. Ooh, Dad, that's gross.
Yeah, well, he made the decision. But I look at this guy, and the sad reality is you know, it's to me, you look at this guy who built a very successful life off of the backs of working people. Working people who had disposable incomes and there's a huge disconnect, just doesn't get it.
You know what it was then that I think people have lost is the language becomes off of the backs of the working people. But what it was an interdependence. The entrepreneur was working in conjunction with the union worker, and they were interdependent.
Yep.
The union guy wanted a pool. The entrepreneur sold pools. Because the union guy had a decent wage, the entrepreneur could sell them. You know, I mean, it was... But we have all this language now that's so hostile. I don't know if you've ever read George Lykoff's Don't Think of an Elephant, but it's definitely something everybody should read constantly over and over again. It's the language. I mean, it's like we give the poor services. No, we don't. We give them necessities.
Yeah.
They're not getting their hair done. They're getting food and a roof, except, oh, by the way, they aren't. 5 million people don't have a roof, and the vast majority of them are babies and school children. You know, but it's the language we use, and that language gets bought into by these people who have Stockholm Syndrome.
Yep.
And then
I'm glad you picked up on that, because I've been saying that for years, that it's, you know, we've identified with our captors, and we've looked at the modern-day Robert Barron's and, oh, yes, thank you, trickle on us some more. And I've been saying, I've been trickled on enough, and the stream is warm and yellow, yes, but it's not gold.
That fire hydrant outfit might be happening. I could recommend you change.
There you go, 1-888-5. Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
While the poor man
in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
Data from NASA's Cassini mission to Saturn is giving space scientists a clearer picture of seasonal changes on Titan, Saturn's large moon.
NASA scientists released images showing change in Titan's atmosphere during and after Titan's 2009 equinox. An equinox for Earth or any planet or moon occurs when the sun appears over that world's equator at local noon. It's a seasonal marker. Scientists say the change in seasons on Titan before and after this equinox involved a wholesale reversal at unexpected altitudes in the circulation of Titan's atmosphere.
The Cassini spacecraft arrived at Saturn in 2004 when it was winter in Titan's northern hemisphere. The north pole of Titan was seen to have a hood of dense gaseous haze and a high-altitude hotspot. There was a vortex above Titan's north pole.
And then the season changed. The North Pole vortex and observed hotspot almost disappeared. Meanwhile, similar features developed at Titan's South Pole, for example, a South Pole vortex. Those features are still present today.
Scientists are watching Titan's South Pole vortex build up. They'll keep watching thanks to Cassini, which is still orbiting around Saturn and its moons. For more, come to EarthSky.org and search for the word Titan. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on Earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Well, the sad thing is that guy seems rational at this point, how far the Republican Party has gone off the deep end.
There isn't going to be 1,000 years of darkness. It's going to be about 24. And then you screwed, period, end.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. I've got Pat LaMarche in studio with me. Going to be sitting in for me tomorrow as I take a day off for my birthday. I'm getting old.
Happy birthday.
Yes, yes.
You are so young.
Yeah.
You are. What are you, like 41 or something?
Yeah, 46.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. In fact, I had one of those moments where you go, holy crap, I'm getting old. Coach my kid's baseball team. He's 7 years old. One of the mothers on the team, I'm talking to, and I go, oh, I got this old glove. She goes, oh, old's your glove? I go, 35 years old. She looked at me with horror. Goes, your glove is 11 years older than I am.
And its skin was better. Ba-dum-bum. No, I'm sorry. I'm sure she was lovely.
That was very good. I like that. Nice.
No, people shouldn't say that. I'm so much older than you. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, what, a month?
I have gloves older than your gloves. No, I'm 53. No, 52. 52. Right.
We're in the same realm there, yeah. About.
I was actually born when Eisenhower was president. Another great Republican.
A good socialist.
Like, fabulous guy. Larry warned us about the military-industrial complex. Are you listening?
Built a highway system. Invested in roads and bridges. We got a governor who won't do that.
Well, that's because he doesn't need them.
I keep saying the only way that we're going to get a transportation bill to fix our needs is if his motorcade gets swallowed up by a sinkhole on the way to the mansion. Because I don't know if you know, but Harrisburg has
swallowed
had 41...
Swallowed all the way, because then that could solve other problems.
Harrisburg's had 41 sinkholes in the last year.
Wow.
In fact, one almost swallowed up a garbage truck.
Wow.
Yeah, good, big fun here.
Now, is
in
that
fact,
recycling?
I've been thinking of having a sinkhole walking tour, but making sure that we have rope, like 50 feet apart,
oh,
in case one of us fall in.
Back out.
We
right,
get out.
Right, right. You know, that's kind of what happened in Seattle, but they made a whole industry out of it. their whole level got buried under the fact that it was nothing but sludge and filth and disgust after they took all the trees down. Oh, by the way, that's something else you might want to pay attention to. And they had to build a whole nother city on top of the city that was underneath.
Nice.
So now you can go underground and see the old city.
Beautiful. It's good for tourism.
Be good for your sinkhole theory thinger.
There you go. And, you know, all of this, you know things we can go and look at on our tour across the country, a people's tour for America. In fact, I'm told as we make that southwestern swing through Texas and down, you know, into New Mexico in there, I'm told that's Pennsylvania's future. And we got a governor who says, you know, Pennsylvania is going to be the Texas of the Northeast. So I'm kind of interested to see what the Texas of the Northeast's future is as we head down I-10 down there.
See, this is what's happened is they have all of these sort of Stepford guys, and they're all been elected. There's Walker, there's Scott, there's LePage up there in Maine, there's this Corbett dude, and they took them all, and they've like Stepford people, and then they give them words to say. And the Alec people did this, and the Koch brothers. And they don't know what they're saying anymore. And just like we've got Stockholm Syndrome, and we're listening going, yes, master, I understand. They don't know what they're saying, because if this man really wanted to make Pennsylvania Texas, well, he would stop.
Exactly. I'm with you. You know, but I'm told the fracking that is going on down in the southern part of Texas is... it's something to behold. And I'm told that's our future in 5 years. So it will be interesting to see what we look like.
And, you know, it's diabolical. Their plan is diabolical because they've tied fracking money to things like housing and helping the poor. And so anyone who ends up talking anything at all against fracking hates your children, doesn't want them educated, doesn't want a roof over somebody's head. It's all very ingenious, you know. There will be a house. It will have flames that come out of the sink. But... at least there'll be a house. That's got to be the dichotomy now.
And the sad thing about this is, you know, as I've been saying for the longest time, the sad reality is we're actually pulling West Virginia down. How bad is that? It's one of those things. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. I'm here with Pat Lamar. She's going to be sitting in for me tomorrow. You want to be nice to her and come back and listen. Lots of calls and lots of thoughts. Going to take a quick break back with hour two. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters is warning Congress against allowing bigger, heavier trucks on the nation's highways. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says corporate greed is what's driving the trucking industry to push legislation that would put heavier and longer big rig trucks on the roads. Hoffa says there are safety issues, and heavier trucks will also put more wear and tear on already crumbling infrastructure. So the union is backing the Safe Highways and Infrastructure Act to prevent heavier, longer trucks on our roads. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says returning military veterans deserve better than the $8.81 an hour part-time Walmart jobs they've been offered. Trumka says President Obama and Vice President Biden have valorized Walmart's announcement of a plan to hire more discharged veterans. Trumka says veterans shouldn't be used as symbols to greenwash Walmart's eroding brand. Trumka says working people are already struggling against an epidemic of low-paying, low-benefit, part-time jobs, and the president should not have helped legitimize that trend. In New York City today, hundreds of members of the National Treasury Employees Union protested damaging sequestration budget cuts. The IRS employees protested unpaid furlough days in a rally at Federal Plaza in New York.
Sequestration is causing the IRS to shut down all public operations on 5 days between May 24th and August 30th. An additional 2 days of unpaid furloughs could occur in August or September. NTEU workers say the unprecedented closings will result in an inability to assist taxpayers seeking help. A gateway for state workers with same-sex partners in Michigan to share health insurance will remain open. Jesse Russell reports.
Michigan will continue to provide health insurance for state workers who live with their same-sex partner. In 2011, the Civil Service Commission voted to include non-family members who live with state workers for more than a year on the state's health insurance plan. Republican Governor Rick Snyder has opposed that decision, arguing that it conflicts with the state's gay marriage ban. An Ingham County judge disagreed and upheld the commission's decision. That ruling was similarly upheld by an appeals court. Republican Attorney General Bill Shute sought to have the Supreme Court overturn the decision, but the court refused to hear the case. According to the Associated Press, there are currently 124 state employees with live-in partners covered by the insurance plan. Michigan voters banned gay marriage in the state in 2004.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting support from the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We need a budget that employs simple honesty for the common growth of our commonwealth. We must continue the journey that will turn the road to recovery into the path to prosperity.
Well, you want the simple honesty? Simple honesty is we've got a governor who's got his head up his, well, you know. And this whole idea that, well, you know, we can't take this Medicaid expansion money because... And you're never going to believe what I heard today. I actually had the Republicans say that we can't take the Medicaid expansion money because it will destroy CHIP. I'm going, are you insane? Are you absolutely insane? And I guess the truth is yes. Sad, sad stuff. Well, today there was a press conference, a bipartisan press conference, to say, hey, you know what? We need to have this Medicaid expansion money for so many reasons, to bring jobs to the state, and, oh, you know what? To ensure those children that we love to hear, that the right loves to say, we love the children, and, of course, to ensure poor people and working people and, well, you know what? People in general, which is why we've asked Paula Stellabot. She's an RN at the Altoona Regional Health System. She was here for the big rally today, saying, you know what, we need to expand Medicaid. Paula, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, thank you.
So what brought you to the Capitol today? Tell me.
Well, it was Nurses Week, and we thought it was a good way of just letting everybody know what our concerns are, and wanted to talk about three things. Mainly was the Medicaid expansion and how that ties into all our other concerns, which are, say, staffing. We're trying to get staffing ratios. We've talked a lot about workplace violence. There's a lot of safety issues that nurses deal with. So in kind of how it all ties in together, if we don't get the Medicaid expansion, you know, the hospitals don't get the money they need to get the staff beefed up, and that staff, not just nurses, but CNAs, LPNs, hospital police, and that all links in with workplace safety.
So let's say we take this Medicaid expansion money, which I'm hoping the governor does. How many people are we talking about in our Commonwealth? How many of our fellow citizens are we talking about potentially covering?
Oh, probably 700,000. You know, plus it's a lot of jobs. You know, it could create like 40,000 new jobs. I mean, we don't understand why he wouldn't take it.
Ideology.
And, you know, we even mentioned that we were told that there's six other conservative Republican governors who have already taken it. So it's not like, you know, it hasn't been done.
Well, it's because they understand economics. They understand bringing that kind of money into their states going to create jobs and going to, you know, as I see it, you know, save the hospitals because, as I understand, and you're a lot closer to this than I am, but you've got all these people who are uninsured, these 700,000 at least, who they do need care, and sometimes they show up at the emergency rooms, and sometimes they need care, and you know what? There's no money there.
Well, and if you don't provide them with the insurance, they don't go to the doctor regularly and maybe take care of things on a preventative end, which would save money. They don't go to doctors. They don't have insurance until they're so terribly sick. They come in through the emergency room. They go to intensive care. And then that's a big write-off for the facility. And, obviously then you're getting into hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it would almost, make sense to give them the insurance up front, offer them preventative services, and you may save money in the long run.
Yeah, we had a guy who flew a kite in this state once. I forget what his name was. Made a stove and all, was the first postmaster. Came up with the post office. I believe he said an ounce of prevention, pound of cure, kind of thing like that. We used to understand that, but not so much.
Yeah, that's common sense, yeah.
Yeah, well, we've lost a lot of that, especially with this with this legislature and this governor. But I look at these staffing levels, and, to me this is one of those things that blew my mind, as I've had relatives who have had serious illnesses and have had long-term stays. And it really was amazing to me how overworked you guys are. With the number of patients that nurses are charged with taking care of. And there's nothing that I know of, and maybe you know of a law here in the Commonwealth that says there's got to be a certain number of nurses for a certain number of patients. Anything?
No, we've been trying. California is the only place I know that has it. I think Allegheny General may have staffing ratios, and we've tried it at Altoona. They're letting us work on guidelines. But, to have enough staff, again, that's something that saves you money in the long run. It cuts down on length of stay. It cuts down on medication errors. There's just so many things that it benefits. It benefits the patients in the long run. They don't fall. They don't have complications because you have enough people checking on them, doing the things that need to be done. It's another thing will pay for itself,
right?
If you can get them to pass the laws.
So what should we be doing? What would the press conference today was obviously a call to action. What should we be doing? What should our listeners be doing? What's the ask? What's the tell?
Well, we would certainly have everybody call their legislators, call the governor, and push that Medicare money is there. It's waiting for us to take it. And what I'm told is if we don't use it for Pennsylvania, it'll just go somewhere else. So it's there. All they have to do is say, yes, we choose to use it. And, that would be the main thing, is to get the money brought in, get the jobs, and then hopefully secondarily we can push them to, pass some staffing ratio bills and some, we've been pushing them to get workplace violence committees in the facilities. But my ask would be for everybody to write, stop by, call your legislators and just tell them to get Governor Corbett to accept that money, bring it into the state, and let's use it for what we need.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Paula, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and thanks for what you do.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It is, as Pat, it is National Nurses Week, and the whole kind of thank a nurse thing. I look at the work that these people do, and it's not to sound religious, but God's work. I mean,
the most trusted profession in the country. I don't know. By the way, number two is postal employees.
Right. But and for good reason. I mean, I was in the hospital, it was the nurses who took much better care of me than the I'm God doctors. But
did you see that great poster going around Facebook? It says, thank a nurse this week. They saved the doctor from killing you.
But, I read this article over the weekend, and it was talking about staffing levels. And it's one of those things. I didn't realize that there aren't laws in place that say a hospital has to have a 16-to-1 nurse to patient or patient to nurse ratio. There's nothing like that. And when my father-in-law was in the hospital years and years ago, the step down intensive care unit, the RN on the floor had 6 patients she had to deal with. And in fact, he was left on the toilet for like 45 minutes. They put him in there, dropped him off, and left him.
Yeah.
And which, you know, fortunately, thanks to the Family Medical Leave Act and that I had reasonable resources, I was able to go down there for the weeks he was in there. But most people don't have the ability to do that.
No. And it's really, it's awful. And then if you don't have the money to, or the availability to go to the hospital at all, you're just going to keep going to work sick. And, oh, by the way, if it's communicable, you're going to make your customers sick.
But this idea that this governor's, you know, other than just blind faith ideology and stupidity, I can't think of another reason why you don't take the expansion money, because there's nothing to it now.
Well, the other thing that's a real problem is if the federal government picks the things that the state of Pennsylvania gets, basically Republicans are working against everything they say they believe in, which is local control. So the local governors
I'm okay
are saying
with that. No. At this point, with this guy, with this legislature, I want whatever the feds can give us.
I understand that. They're against their own rhetoric. Their rhetoric is, oh, no, we can do it better on a smaller level. Then screw the federal government. We don't want their money. So then the federal government forces on them whatever.
Now, we've already seen that.
Are you guys paying attention? You
look at Act 13, where they wanted to take – they literally took local control away from municipalities for the drilling. Said that you as a mayor or a borough council, yeah, you have no right to say no to the drillers. The drillers are going to come and stick their needles right up your backside, and you have nothing to say about it.
Ridiculous. I mean, this is supposedly democracy.
Well, fortunately, our Supreme Court, not completely insane, said that's unconstitutional, you can't do it. But, you know, at some point, you got to go, these are the people who keep talking about local control, people who keep talking about, we love the Constitution, yet unconstitutional voter ID, unconstitutional theft of local control, unconstitutional redistricting, three strikes in the game that I played, you're out.
You want to know how they get gun control? Arm the poor. A free gun to every poor person. Everyone making less than $15,000 a year, come get your free gun.
Well, they got
you'll get gun control so fast it'll make your head spin.
Well, they got guys who now are saying we'll teach you how to print them. Plastic guns that you can print.
They fired it. Did you see that?
I know.
They fired that weapon.
And now everybody can have a printable, non-detectable gun.
Now you can fax a gun behind the security check.
There you go. Brave New World. And now you're ending up in NRA world, where everyone should have a gun. And, you know, like LaPierre said, I bet you those people in Boston wish they had a gun. Why? The bomb went up. What the hell would a gun have done you other than make more chaos, you dimwit? Which is kind of interesting because, you know, the inside joke about LaPierre is that he's a menace with a gun. Evidently, they had shot a commercial, and when he was holding the gun ready to shoot downrange, they said, cut, and he turned and pointed the gun at the camera.
Yeah, that's the Dick Cheney gun school he went to.
Well, I think Dick Cheney shot.
Dick Cheney, Worthington.
I think Dick was drunk.
I do, too.
Off his behind, and he was with his mistress. I don't think it was anything other than...
She had to be drunk, too, then, because who would be his mistress? Please. But not enough booze.
The whole reason that they didn't report it was not about that they were just a little liquored up. His squeeze was there.
You think?
That's my view.
Oh. I hope it was a man.
Could have been. Could have been. Quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Pat Lamar. Stick around. Right back.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth. Sky.
Data from NASA's Cassini mission to Saturn is giving space scientists a clearer picture of seasonal changes on Titan, Saturn's large moon.
NASA scientists released images showing change in Titan's atmosphere during and after Titan's 2009 equinox. An equinox for Earth or any planet or moon occurs when the sun appears over that world's equator at local noon. It's a seasonal marker. Scientists say the change in seasons on Titan before and after this equinox involved a wholesale reversal at unexpected altitudes in the circulation of Titan's atmosphere.
The Cassini spacecraft arrived at Saturn in 2004 when it was winter in Titan's northern hemisphere. The north pole of Titan was seen to have a hood of dense gaseous haze and a high-altitude hotspot. There was a vortex above Titan's north pole.
And then the season changed. The North Pole vortex and observed hotspot almost disappeared. Meanwhile, similar features developed at Titan's South Pole, for example, a South Pole vortex. Those features are still present today.
Scientists are watching Titan's South Pole vortex build up. They'll keep watching thanks to Cassini, which is still orbiting around Saturn and its moons. For more, come to EarthSky.org and search for the word Titan. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
There are many employers that say, you know, we're looking for people, but we can't find anybody that has passed the drug test, a lot of them. And that's a concern for me because we're having a serious problem with that.
Go, go, go. I messed up my entire life go, because I got high. Go, 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 go. I lost my kids and wife. Because I got high.
Say what, say what, say what, say what.
Now I'm sleeping on the sidewalk and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, hey, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
And you're lazy and stupid, too. Put that on top of there. Because if you remember, while he was candidate Corbett, it was, well, those unemployed people, they're just lazy. Because there are jobs out there. I talk to people all the time. And yet, at that time, there were five people looking for every one available job. Now you're down to about 3.5-4 applicants for every available job. So I guess it's gone from being lazy and stupid to now they're just high. And I would guess if that's the case, then he did a kind of a crappy job as Attorney General. Thoughts? Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, give me a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can also email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm here with Pat LaMarsh, who's on board. I'm going to take over tomorrow for the day as I take a little bit of time to enjoy my birthday and plan for the People's Tour for America as we go across country. Pat, thanks for taking time for me.
I'm very happy to be here. And this weekend is Mother's Day.
It absolutely is.
Do you have a plan? Are you the breakfast in bed, here's your flower, let me fluff your pillows type?
No.
No?
The kids wake up at 5:30 in the morning. I'm not getting up that early.
You're not making breakfast in bed for the kids. So you're not going to get up with the kids at 5:30. She has to get up with the kids at 5:30?
Sorry, I don't do that. I have the same.
Well, you do work till midnight or two.
I don't get home till about 2 o'clock in the morning, so good luck on that one. But, you know, the reality is they do the same thing for Mother's Day every year, which is I give her $100, say, go get a massage, come home, take the day, relax, watch TV, do whatever it is you do. I'm going to take the kids, we're going to leave, and there will be peace. And there will be quiet and tranquility. Light your candles, read your book, do whatever it is you do, but be happy when I get home.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
That's good.
I subscribe to the idea if mama's not happy, nobody's happy.
That's very true.
But, you know, the thing is I do this throughout the year as well. It's not just a Mother's Day thing. You know, every once in a while, mom needs a break. She needs a little time to recharge her batteries so she can not make everyone miserable.
And she's the one. I've had a lovely dinner at your house as we were preparing our plotting and planning our trip around the country and to see if the kids could stand me. And it was really fun. First of all, dinner was delicious. The kids were great. Thoroughly energetic.
I have three wonderful kids, and my wife does an outstanding job.
You need a giggle track out of that house because those kids giggle, and it's so fantastic. So this is going to be fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, the background sound of giggling, I'm sure, will be heard across the nation as we travel around talking about who really made this country great.
Yep.
and how we got to keep it that way.
And the amazing thing is she brought three amazing children into this world. And fortunately, we've had the resources to make sure that they were well taken care of. But I look at this Save the Children report just out that points out that 1 million infants a year die on the very day that they're born. And if that's not bad enough, here in the U.S., we have the highest first-day infant mortality rate of the industrialized world. In fact, the first-day infant death rate is 50% more than all of the other industrialized countries who reported combined. So for those people who love to thump their chest and say, we're number one, here we are, number one. 11,300 babies last year died on the very day that they were born.
11,300 babies in the United States died on the day they were born.
And they say most of the deaths had to do with being born too early or infections or complications at birth. They say that, according to the report, that says that things could be solved fairly cheaply with just basic medical intervention. And what the report goes into saying is that the teen birth rates, that's partially to blame, because generally teenage mothers tend to be poor, tend to be less educated, and the part that drives me insane, especially when you talk about healthcare, tend to receive less prenatal care than older mothers. So you look at this and you go, there's a lot of things we could do to fix this. We are the wealthiest country in the nation. And if we believe that rhetoric that we believe in family values and we love the children and we want the children born, how about putting some resource into prenatal care instead of closing down Planned Parenthoods and doing all that stuff like the right's doing? Why aren't we doing more of that?
Because we don't care about the poor. Better they should die and decrease the surplus population. It's the Dickensian United States of America of 2013. And it's got, the teen birth rate is down. So you can say this is because of teen birth rates, and all that means is if the teen birth rate was where it was in, say, 1960, that number would be even higher. That's 220 babies a state.
Here again, it comes down to me, as the report says, you look at this, it's got to do with prenatal care, and it also, you look at the fact that they, according to this report, half of all U.S. pregnancies are unplanned. Half are unplanned. And you go, oh, yeah, abstinence only. Oh, that's working.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things. When Sarah Palin ran for vice president, I had absolutely, I wouldn't have respected her anyway because of, she's Sarah Palin. She sees Russia from her porch. But the fact that she could either claim such political naivete or just be so unconcerned about what was going to happen to her daughter, who she knew was pregnant, her daughter who she taught abstinence only to, and she knew she was pregnant, and that she could be that unconcerned with the way the media was going to just rip that kid to shreds.
Yeah.
That's not a good mommy. And if you're not a good mommy, you can't run this country. And oh, by the way, if you're not a good daddy, you can't run this country either, which means, well, there you go.
Yeah, but, I remember the famous quote of Tom DeLay, who said that, if we didn't have abortion, we'd have those 40 million low-wage workers. We wouldn't need immigrants. One of my favorites.
You know what? If we didn't have abortion, they could all die the first day of their life, right? It's okay when they die the day after they get out of the womb. That's when we stop caring.
God's will.
This has blown my mind. 83-year-old Catholic nun and two of her fellow peace activists found guilty today of intending to injure the national defense.
Oh.
83-year-old nun and two fellow peace activists. Turns out that they broke into the Y-12 National Security Complex. You know how crafty those nuns are.
No, don't get me started on nuns.
I know, I went to Catholic school too.
One of those evil this can't be one of those evil sadistic ones with the pointer.
She must have gotten in with her pointer.
It must have been the pointer.
She got into the Y-12 National Security Complex, a nuclear weapons production facility in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, with a pointer. That's how she did it. after hearing 2 days of testimony and arguments and then deliberating nearly 2.5 hours, the jury found the defendants guilty of damaging more than $1,000 worth of government property by spray painting it. They broke in and spray painted biblical messages on an estimated 400 tons of highly enriched uranium and radioactive material used to fuel a nuclear bomb. That's what was housed in this building.
Anti-war nuns.
But wait a minute. Supposing it had been a 38-year-old Timothy McVeigh who goes into a building that houses 400 tons of highly enriched uranium. And he doesn't go with his pointer and his spray can. He goes in and says,
ammonium nitrate.
You're right. I know where I can get some money. I could buy more ammonium nitrate than I can even dream of by just getting a little bit of this highly enriched uranium and selling it to any of the people that, oh, my government tells me are bad guys.
Who have aluminum tubes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Scooter Libby has all their addresses. Right? So these three people, one of them 83, her pointer must have been like in the shape of a walker. You know?
You know, the more of these stories I hear, there's hope yet. I may end up back at the Catholic Church. I mean, you know, you look at the Pope the other day saying, you know, it's slave conditions in Bangladesh. And you know, this greed and, you know, this profit over people. I mean, that's the Catholic Church I grew up. I mean, there were some sadistic nuns. But the church that believed in social justice and peace and, I don't know.
They're still chewing people up about letting people in the United States be hungry. Those are the members of the Catholic Church I'm only all excited about. You know, the nuns who are chewing everybody a new one because they're
nuns
letting
on the bus,
go.
Simone Campbell.
But this goes back to your unemployment thing. Brings us right back around. See, how many 3.5 people looking for every job?
Nope.
Well, no longer is Greg Borgdi Obed, the 57-year-old unemployed house painter who found something to paint. A building with 400 tons of enriched uranium.
There you go. And they only paid him $1,000?
No, they only did $1,000 worth of damage.
Okay.
But they'll probably be in prison for, can you say forever?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, they
can
should.
You say Guantanamo.
Guantanamo.
Yeah.
Guantanamo.
Send the nun down there. Maybe she can help people eat.
Wow.
Imprisoning a Guantanamo Bay inmate costs the taxpayer $900,000 a year.
Oh, it's well worth it.
This is according to the United Kingdom's Mail Online, because, of course, we can't have this news.
And it's well worth it. Well worth every penny spent. Because why would we want to educate children or get prenatal care to teen mothers to make sure that their babies don't die on day one?
It's been dubbed the most expensive prison on earth, and President Barack Obama cited this cost this week as one of the many reasons to shut down the detention center, which burns through $900,000 per prisoner annually. $150 million each year to operate the prison.
Now, I can see that a little differently. See, because I think then, you know, if I'm thinking, if I've got my Corbett brain on, we could privatize that.
It's very small.
Yeah.
It's tiny.
It's very small.
Yeah.
It's like a guy driving a Corvette. If I put my Corbett brain on, I can look at this and I say, well, we privatize that Guantanamo, and there could be a lot of profit that goes in it, and that's campaign cash. It's a win-win situation. See, all I got to do is put my Corbett brain on. The more jobs, Governor. More jobs than Wyoming.
Do you want to guess how much the average maximum security prison costs per inmate?
I guess like 45,000, 50.
The really bad guys, 70.
Wow. Wouldn't it be better to 8%. Pay for them to go to college?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, wouldn't it be better just to, you know, say, don't do that? Never mind.
A 12-year-old black.
There's no profit in that.
A 12-year-old black child, black boy, has the same odds of going to prison as going to college.
See, I would have thought his odds of going to college wouldn't have been that high.
What are we doing? We don't care about that kid either, because he's outside the womb.
It's profit. Pure profit. Anyway, got to take a quick break right here. Pat, thanks for being here. Pat Lamar's going to sit in for me tomorrow. Going to be on the big A People's Tour for America. Of course, check out the website at peoplestourforamerica.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Earth, sky.
Data from NASA's Cassini mission to Saturn is giving space scientists a clearer picture of seasonal changes on Titan, Saturn's large moon.
NASA scientists released images showing change in Titan's atmosphere during and after Titan's 2009 equinox. An equinox for Earth or any planet or moon occurs when the sun appears over that world's equator at local noon. It's a seasonal marker. Scientists say the change in seasons on Titan before and after this equinox involved a wholesale reversal at unexpected altitudes in the circulation of Titan's atmosphere.
The Cassini spacecraft arrived at Saturn in 2004 when it was winter in Titan's northern hemisphere. The north pole of Titan was seen to have a hood of dense gaseous haze and a high-altitude hotspot. There was a vortex above Titan's north pole.
And then the season changed. The north pole vortex and observed hotspot almost disappeared. Meanwhile, similar features developed at Titan's south pole. For example, a south pole vortex. Those features are still present today.
Scientists are watching Titan's south pole vortex build up. They'll keep watching thanks to Cassini, which is still orbiting around Saturn and its moons. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for the word Titan. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
So you wake up in the morning, get to work and fight yourself. And then somebody tells you that you're owned by someone else. So what's it all about? It's money! Work it out!
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our quote of the day comes from Pam Martins in her piece of Wall Street on Parade. The Koch brothers' wealth grew by $33 billion in 3 years as America's schools report 1 million homeless kids. She says, quote, "We used to be a country with a rich heart. Now we're a land of the heartless rich." And, you know, the reality is you see this massive growth, this enormous growth by the Koch brothers, $33 billion in 3 years, and we're gutting public education. We're eviscerating the general assistance budget. We're basically kicking people in wheelchairs off the curb.
I think it's time for eminent domain.
I'm with you.
Let's take their money. It's for the common good. Just like a road or a ramp or something that we need, and all of a sudden a farmer loses, or, you know, they're going to put power lines through for a power company. It's just for the common good. Them making that kind of money is ridiculous.
So what you're telling me is the guy who was the CEO of JCPenney, who made 1,800 times what the store clerk made, you think there's something wrong with that?
I do, although they're at least right on gender issues. And I mean, of all the rich heartless bastards, they at least care about the fact that you don't have to necessarily be anatomically one way or another to fall in love with somebody.
But that's just
the
capitalists.
Only thing I can say.
That's
J.
just
J.
capitalists. I mean,
you think that's true?
I think they see that that's a market, and look, they're staying out of the debate. And for me, I think businesses should stay completely out of it. And
but as they're not staying out of the debate. They've got the two daddies Father Day pictures, the two mommies. Oh yeah. And then the million moms, they're all like up in arms. They're like, oh, I'm not gonna shop at JCPenney anymore. I can't have tacky clothes if they like gay people to have them.
All right. Well, so. Good for them. Still, we're talking about 1,800
times. All right, I'm with you on that.
And I got to be honest. This is where I go back to, you said earlier, the good socialist Republican Dwight David Eisenhower. Top marginal tax rate, 92%. Maybe we need to start thinking in terms of, you know what? We've created this billionaire class. We've created this wealth class who has done such damage to our nation and our economy. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the crumbling roads. Look at the infrastructure that's being destroyed. That my grandparents' generation left this to me. And what we've done is we've allowed, through disinvestment and hands off to them, we've allowed it to crumble.
Howard Zinn said, you can't be a true imperialist nation unless you have a third world at home. And we saw England face that. We saw the United Kingdom face that. The World War II had ended. Their globalism was killing their economy. They said, you know what? We're going to do things like health care for our own, take care of our own, universal education through college. We're going to make sure the people of the United Kingdom are taken care of, which means, here, take Hong Kong back. Here you go. The sun will set on the British Empire, and we're going to care about our own. And they started building up their own infrastructure again inside their own country and stopped all this willy-nilly. And they said, you know what? It's great because the U.S. will take it over. They are power-hungry, power-thirsty, and they want all the natural resources, and they'll just do it for us. And so I think that's why Tony Blair kicked in a little when we wanted to invade Iraq for no good reason. You know, because somebody else is doing that imperialist hogwash for him.
Operation Iraqi Liberation.
Oil.
Exactly. I mean, it's that simple. But again, I look back to this and you go, we don't have the money to fund education. They keep telling us we're broke. They keep telling us we don't have money for education. But we've got tons of money for tax breaks and tax havens and loopholes and all these handouts, all this welfare for the corporations and the very wealthy. The reason I wanted to see Mitt Romney's tax returns, not because I thought he did anything wrong, because I want to see where he's hiding his money. And I wanted to have the conversation, is this the best use of resources? Because I'll be honest with you, Pat, I'm a fan of loopholes. I'm a big fan of loopholes because I think you want to incentivize certain behaviors and have disincentives for others. The problem is the overall rate is so freaking low, now you got people who weren't actually paying back. When we're paying General Electric to exist, there's a problem.
You know, I lived in the Netherlands. I went to graduate school there when my kids were in middle school. And in the Netherlands, everybody gets a benefit for their child. They get a child benefit, so they get a check. You own Nokia. And you're going to have a baby, and you get a check. You get your 480 euros a month. And I am a laborer at the local shoe store, and I get a check for 480 euros a month. We all get it because we have a child. The difference is you get taxed at 60%, so all that money goes right back. And I pay the minimum tax because I'm one of the minimum wage employees, oh, by the way, which is about $500 a week. And that's their minimum wage in Europe. And so nobody knows when you and I go in the bank if I own Nokia or if I'm a shoe clerk, except maybe by my shoes. And so there is an equity, there's a fairness, there's a guess what, everybody's child has the same value. But if you're making money out the back end, you're going to pay a tax appropriate to that. Right. And you know what? When someone defends your nation, your Mercedes has to be defended to a much higher degree than my $200 crap box that I'm driving around in. Your Mercedes, when there's no red light there, gets smashed up a lot more than my $200 crap box does when I don't have a red light. You have a lot more to lose when you have that kind of resource. And when you're the Koch brothers, it's absolutely obscene. She says as her voice squeaks.
It's true. But you know, the reality is you know, what you laid out there is a very conservative idea. In fact, Uncle Milty himself came up with the idea of a negative tax, which is what our earned income tax credit was based on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the idea of, well, businesses need consumers that need people with money so that they can spend and that they can create demand, which creates jobs. And that whole spiraling thing that the people who seem to be running our economy into the ground don't seem to get, because it's this blind faith ideology and austerity and pain and slashing, and you're lazy or a drug addict.
We're a punishing society, though, and you can tell that the decisions are made by punishers. And it's upsetting, because we get each other, we get the average person to buy into it. It's this horizontal hostility where you and I have to hate each other because we can't even fathom hating the Koch brothers, you know. So I see you with an extra stroller, and I'm like, wow, well, is he getting the money for the stroller? And geez, he left his garage door open, and I see he's got his snowmobile.
Because we see each other.
Yeah.
Because we live in the same neighborhoods, and, you know, as I've said in the past, and I tell this story about my grandfather, which, you know, is one of those moments where you go, yeah, the old man was right. I think it was my grandmother's birthday. My grandfather decided he was going to take her to one of the plays down in Hannah, down at Public Square in Cleveland. You know, a big night out. Mm-hmm. So he, you know, he got tickets, and they made reservations to a, you know, big fancy restaurant, and saved up his money, and he went to the restaurant, and, you know, they sat down, had dinner, and oh, his boss is waiting in line, waiting for a table. They go over to the theater, they sit down, they begin to watch, there's two seats open next to them. And this is one of those moments where you can't make this up. The play begins, and in come the boss and his wife, disrupting everyone. And my grandfather said, I knew right then and there that the end was near. Because he didn't want to be in the same restaurant with me, his employee. He didn't want to be in the same theater with me, his employee. He wanted me to make the money for him, he wanted me to do the job for him, but not be seen, not be around. And that's what's happened over the last 30, 40 years. They have pushed the people who have created the wealth and done the work and built the roads and built the bridges, pushed them to the side and said, you know what? You're on your own, brother.
But somehow they have convinced the person making $35,000 a year. And by the way, half of the United States makes less than $34,000 a year. Half of the country makes less than $34,000 a year. But they've taken the guy that makes $35,000 a year and convinced him to hate the guy that makes $15,000. And somewhere along the way, I have to figure out how that happened, because that's not a Christian value. You know, we're talking about all this.
Depends on which God you believe in. Is it that angry one who punishes people and says, we're going to pay, and man who lies with man, abomination, die.
But what if he's rich? No. But see,
well, we love rich people. Didn't you hear
even
Herman
if they
Cain?
Lie with man?
Well, that doesn't really matter, now, does it?
How? See, this is what I don't understand. So we're all average slobs, and we average slobs have to love each other, period. And we have to say, you know what? I'm glad you got a stroller for the baby. You know, I'm not upset that somebody cared enough, and I'm not going to be angry because you got your earned income credit and you bought a TV set. You
but
know?
Yeah, you look at this, and this plays into the pension debate. And you understand, yesterday our governor came out and decided that they're going to attack public sector workers and their pensions because they've created this crisis, which is what the Republicans do. And Democrats came along with it. They're complicit in this as well. For, you know, a good part of, you know, 15, 20 years now, they haven't made the contributions to the pension fund that the employer is supposed to make. So now they're coming back and say, well, these teachers and these cops and these firefighters and these public workers, they've got these gilded pensions, and they've got these lavish pensions. You know, $23,000 a year on average, lavish pension. And it plays into right what you're saying, because they're pitting people against each other, because the private sector, they got screwed. I swear, I listened to the one hearing where the guy goes, the private sector decided that the 401k is a better plan. Why would they do that? And one of the witnesses says, because they don't have to fund it.
Yeah.
Because you look at the average 401k in this country, the average person holds about 18 grand.
Yeah.
Not quite enough to retire on.
It is absolutely abysmal. And it's, for some reason, you have to have somebody to hate. And it's just like you said, it has to be somebody you can see. It has to be somebody you get in your crosshairs. You see someone with an EBT card at the grocery store, and you're angry at them for having groceries. But this is absurd. The grocery store is there because yep. Someone's buying the groceries. If the grocery store... And the whole thing about people under Obama, and believe me, I am really annoyed with him, but
that makes two of us.
The people under Obama getting more food stamps, the food stamp expansion was under George Bush. It's just that in 2008, October of 2008, one short month before that dirtbag was finally replaced electorally a few months later to be done completely. The bottom fell out of the house of cards he was building. And all those people who didn't used to qualify for food stamps with his expanded food stamp regulations ended up needing them, and that happened on Obama's watch.
Because I remember being on the air saying, look, you know, one of the things I agreed with Bush doing, because, hey, don't wish them away. You may need them very soon. And I remember saying that quite candidly because I was predicting March of 2009 that the economy would collapse. You know, not because I'm clairvoyant, but because all the signs were there. And what it told me at the time,
because you're not an idiot,
things were much worse than even I had imagined.
Right.
And the House of Cards was built on an even shakier ground. Just what it is.
And the reason they expanded food stamps is because starving people have nothing to lose. And if you want to rape the land, you've got to make sure the people at least are fed. You can take away their health care and you can take away their homes, but a hungry belly, eventually.
Hit it. Go ahead. Because the old labor saying, you know, when your stomach's empty, your head gets right.
Right.
You know, at some point when you got, and it's right there.
And that's exactly why George Bush expanded food stamps. No other reason but self-preservation.
You know, and for me, I go back to A. Philip Randolph, who was furious at the welfare program that was set up. He wanted jobs programs. And I firmly believe there should be no handout programs. There should be jobs programs. And if government has to be that employer of last resort, then so be it. So that everyone feels that, you know what, they've done their day and they've earned their way. Because I believe there's a therapeutic quality to work. And at the end of the day, food stamps, if your job is going down and cleaning the bus stop once a day, that's what your job is. And to me, those handout programs, as someone who's lived it, I think it does a little more harm than good to me.
Unless you already have a job, like being somebody's parent.
And there's something wrong with that, isn't
it? No, but like being someone's parent. And that's what welfare reform has done, is we've said, you know what, the job of a parent is a worthless job now.
Good point.
And so we're going to make you do the Aspire program, go do something, even if it's only volunteering, get out of the house, leave your kids in daycare that, oh, by the way, the taxpayer is going to have to pay for, because we no longer value parenting. It's what they did in slavery. In slavery, they said, you know what? These babies don't need parents. The parents need to be in the field.
Yeah, that's
we'll
that's
give
point.
The babies to the elder slaves to raise until they're big enough to sell off for cheap labor to. And it's the same exact thing.
Yeah, family values. Love the children. Because they're good cheap labor. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Pat LaMarche. Give us a call. Right back.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
For many, the 8-hour day is the standard, but it wasn't always this way. The original American workday was from sunup to sundown, following the demands of an agricultural workday. Over time, the nation became more industrialized and workers moved from individually owned, self-sufficient farms to factories, taking workers from their homes and families. Factory owners demanded the agricultural sunup to sundown workday, forcing workers to toil long hours in grueling conditions. Workers began to collectively organize in pursuit of more time for family, education, and recreation. The cry of 8-hour 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will grew louder. For a century, the 8-hour day was viewed as the holy grail of the labor movement, and for this hallowed vision, workers sacrificed, often with their blood and their lives. The first strike for shorter hours occurred in May of 1791 in the city of Philadelphia, where carpenters protested a day's wages, paying the same in January as was paid for a longer day in July. Chicago in 1886 was home to one of the largest showings of solidarity. Some 80 3,000 workers turned out to support the eight-hour cause. It was in Chicago's Haymarket Square that a terrorist bomb and the blazing guns of company-paid police cost policemen and numerous workers their lives and their blood. As a result of the Haymarket tragedy, eight innocent men were tried and convicted for a crime they did not commit. Four of the men were hung. The Haymarket Square tragedy was but one of many battles in which working men, women, and children shed blood, tears, and flesh in the pursuit of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Month was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see, I can't, the third one I can't, sorry. Oops.
Maybe our governor's not all that stupid.
Yeah. I tell you, Brett's fabulous. Brett comes up with this stuff. This is great.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But stuff just makes itself. I mean, really.
Oops, I did it again. They said that was sleep apnea.
Is that what it was?
That was what it was. He has such bad sleep apnea that he wasn't getting enough sleep at night, and therefore he wasn't making any sense when he was talking. And I'm like, okay, what do you do if you're the poor slob who's going to work 16 hours today? And, you know,
drive a truck for a living.
Right. And you've got sleep apnea and you can't go to see anybody and you can't get a sleep study done. That wasn't easy.
Yep.
Because your insurance company said so. There you go.
But I bet you he got the best of care. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Tom on line one. How are you doing tonight, Tom?
Okay. Now, he doesn't have sleep apnea. He's got sleep acne.
Sleep acne.
Yeah. So listen, as I think about some of the issues that we're faced with, and I look at our impending doom here. We're using currently 1.5 times the resources that the Earth can regenerate to maintain our lifestyle. And at our current rate, sometime in the 2030s, we're going to be up at 2 times. Okay. And we have all these bozos running around talking about sustainability. How can you talk about sustainability in a world that values capitalism, that's based on growth? And not only that, how do you talk about sustainability and survival when any form of population birth control is off the table to talk about.
Well, you don't, because you fiddle while Rome burns. And I think one of the most important things about, our culture of use is we've given up completely on the reuse or the reduce, let alone recycle.
Right.
And, there's a lot of money to be made by incentivizing people not to get something new.
Or to make things well enough that you don't have to continue to buy a bunch of cheap plastic crap at Walmart that breaks every time you touch it.
Well, Texas, of all states, made it illegal to throw away oil in any way. Texas. And all of a sudden, all across Texas, these oil recycling plants opened up. That's a way to make commerce.
Right.
A way that we don't. Do you have a suggestion, Tom?
Do I? Well, I think we have to have an honest, open, first of all, an honest, open discussion about what is it that we want our country to be? I think that people are spastic. How many people run around and say, the problem with education is our teachers? And then when you ask them, well, do you know any teachers who were bad? Well, oh, no, because the ones I know were good. That people don't think. They can't connect the dots. And they listen to the radio. They listen to these little tidbits that somebody throws out there, and all of a sudden that becomes the truth.
Why that easy out, though, Tom? Why are people doing it that easily? Why are they just saying, okay, the bad guy, the boogeyman's my kid's teacher, and the boogeyman's or the boogeyman's your kid's teacher, or the boogeyman's your kid?
I think there's for me, you have to also look at the economics of our country. That when you have people that have to work three jobs to survive,
yep.
How the hell do you have time to do the research? Because certainly the mainstream media doesn't give you any information at all.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you have time to go and find out what's going on? Never mind, have time to spend with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're trying to keep your nose above water. And so I think it's easy to be able to say, yeah, that guy's right. I agree with him.
Or it's what you hear constantly and what the echo chamber keeps telling you while you're trying to stay on the treadmill. And, when the recession hit, I said we should be talking about a 32-hour work week. We should be talking about how to make sure people have jobs like they did in Germany. Make sure people are employed and can still raise their family. And, oh, hey, by the way, let's do what my grandparents' generation did. Make that 40-hour work week, be able to support a family when mom or dad stays home to raise the kids, because we keep talking about family values.
So maybe you can answer this for me. The politicians talk about the problems with Social Security. We got to cut benefits. We got to have people work longer. Why not just raise, instead of paying on the on the first $70,000 or $72,000 and everything else being exempt, why not pay on everything that you make?
I'm right there with you, and I've been saying that for years now, Tom. I got to take a quick break here at the top of the hour. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much.
Hey, Pat.
Yep.
I look forward to you getting the national show.
Thank you, Tom. Have a great night.
Tom.
Okay, bye.
Quick break. Right back with hour three. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The International Brotherhood of Teamsters is warning Congress against allowing bigger, heavier trucks on the nation's highways. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says corporate greed is what's driving the trucking industry to push legislation that would put heavier and longer big rig trucks on the roads. Hoffa says there are safety issues, and heavier trucks will also put more wear and tear on already crumbling infrastructure. So the union is backing the Safe Highways and Infrastructure Act to prevent heavier, longer trucks on our roads. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says returning military veterans deserve better than the $8.81 an hour part-time Walmart jobs they've been offered. Trumka says President Obama and Vice President Biden have valorized Walmart's announcement of a plan to hire more discharged veterans. Trumka says veterans shouldn't be used as symbols to greenwash Walmart's eroding brand. Trumka says working people are already struggling against an epidemic of low-paying, low-benefit, part-time jobs, and the president should not have helped legitimize that trend. In New York City today, hundreds of members of the National Treasury Employees Union protested damaging sequestration budget cuts. The IRS employees protested unpaid furlough days in a rally at Federal Plaza in New York. Sequestration is causing the IRS to shut down all public operations on 5 days between May 24th and August 30th. An additional 2 days of unpaid furloughs could occur in August or September. NTEU workers say the unprecedented closings will result in an inability to assist taxpayers seeking help. A gateway for state workers with same-sex partners in Michigan to share health insurance will remain open. Jesse Russell reports.
Michigan will continue to provide health insurance for state workers who live with their same-sex partner. In 2011, the Civil Service Commission voted to include non-family members who live with state workers for more than a year on the state's health insurance plan. Republican Governor Rick Snyder has opposed that decision, arguing that it conflicts with the state's gay marriage ban. An Ingham County judge disagreed and upheld the commission's decision. That ruling was similarly upheld by an appeals court. Republican Attorney General Bill Shute sought to have the Supreme Court overturn the decision, but the court refused to hear the case. According to the Associated Press, there are currently 124 state employees with live-in partners covered by the insurance plan. Michigan voters banned gay marriage in the state in 2004.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting support from the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You know, the more people we see in the streets, the more folks who are standing up and saying enough is enough already. We do need to change our little corner of the world. Because, you know, I had someone not too long ago, you know, how do we change things? And I said, well, make your neighborhood better. Make your community, make your neighborhood better. And then the next community, they'll look, hey, I like what they did. Let's do that. That's how you change the world. And what I've been seeing with this fast food forward campaign, I've been seeing, you know, people in New York and Chicago saying, you know what, we need to make these fast food jobs the middle class jobs of the next generation, much like my grandparents did with factory work and with mining and truck driving. You know, those were not middle class jobs when my grandfather came back from World War II. They were by the time he got into the middle of his work life, which is why I think what we're seeing in Chicago and New York and now in St. Louis, where fast food workers are taken to the streets and saying, you know what, we don't want just a 10-cent raise. We want a real raise. Which is why I've asked Reverend Martin Reffin and to come talk to us. He's the campaign director for St. Louis Can't Survive on 735. Reverend, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks very much.
So explain to me what happened today.
Very, very exciting. Workers coming together, building power, getting onto the street. They need a better compensation, and they want to be able to form a union without retaliation.
So you got these workers who work in all the fast food, the McDonald's, the Burger Kings, the Wendy's, the Jimmy John's, all of those, making just minimum wage, probably living in homeless shelters, struggling to make ends meet, and they're saying what? What do we want?
Well, interesting that you say that, because for the last 6 years I've been the director of the state's largest shelter for women, children, and families, Gateway 180 Homelessness Reversed. So every day I saw women in the shelter, in the shelter that I ran, women who were in low-wage jobs, some working full-time. It's not right that persons who are playing by the rules, doing all that they can to stabilize their lives and to provide for their families, end up living on a tight margin and then becoming homeless because of problems that we all kind of face. That's why I've gotten into this campaign myself, bringing community people to the table to join with our fast food workers. They're the ones taking showing leadership in St. Louis. It's tremendous to be with them, and I'm very, very proud of community groups and community leaders who are going to stand with them.
And looking at the story, that there's a couple of stories I've read on this. It's a pretty sizable list of community, religious, faith-based community, the labor community, a fairly sizable organization you guys have built.
Well, this is the workers have come together really just very recently in St. Louis in March, being inspired by what happened in New York, Chicago. But they also have a long history of working on issues where they are trying to have to build power necessary to have a wage that allows them to take care of their families. Missouri Jobs for Justice, which is an organization that for the last decade has provided tremendous leadership in trying to address issues of low wages, increasing minimum wage, creating living wage ordinances, doing what's necessary to get people engaged in the work of continually putting a political structure together that allows folks to make a move in the area of increasing wages. And we're able to use that infrastructure of community groups, faith, community, labor, and student leaders. That infrastructure exists. It's been working for years, but now it's a perfect match to what fast food workers want to get done. And we're, you know, it's great to be able to bring these forces together in order to bring power to bear on these multi-billion-dollar corporations.
So what do you say to the people who say, well, you know, these companies, it's what the price of labor is. They can't afford it anymore, with ignoring the fact that the CEO of McDonald's made a million times the hourly rate of the person who handed me the little bag out the window this morning. They can't afford it. What's the argument there?
Well, I think that doesn't hold water. You're looking at a $200 billion industry with very, very substantial profits over the last several years, very high profits in the hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. But workers on the line have not seen any benefit from those huge profits which they have helped to produce. So fast food workers are saying enough is enough. Time to stand up, work with their community partners, and ask for better compensation, compensation that allow them to take care of their families and to be able to form a union. It's very important for a couple of reasons. This is not just for themselves, but our entire community here in St. Louis. We understand that when, and again, being a person that worked in social service, you see it time and again that people in low-wage jobs must use government support in order to survive. They need to use food stamps or, you know, use the homeless system to stabilize their housing situation, so forth. That just means that the fast food industry, this you know, couple of $100 billion industry, is using government programming to subsidize low wages. We need to stop that in St. Louis. We need to stop it across the nation.
I absolutely agree with you. So you know, what is the number you're looking for? I know in New York and Chicago they were talking about $15 an hour, which I got to be honest, I see the work that these folks do, and I don't think that's out of line. I think in this country you need at least that to be able to afford a decent place to lay your head, at least that to put food on the table so that you could support a family. maybe without asking for food stamps or some type of assistance. Maybe it'd be a good idea to make work pay. And, you know, I remember back when Obama took office, I said that, you know, the one hope I had for the guy is that he would save the reward of work. And I wanted the Employee Free Choice Act passed, as weak as that legislation was, because I believe workers in fast food restaurants, in the big box retailers, they need to have that right, and they need to have that ability.
Well, that's what's going on in St. Louis, because St. Louis is, you know, this has happened in New York, it's happened in Chicago, but now in St. Louis, St. Louis is a fairly conservative, family-based community. We do believe in the value of hard work, and we believe also that when a person is working full-time, they should be able to take care of their family. And these are the jobs that are the fastest growing in our community, and they can be the jobs that, as I heard you say earlier, these are the kinds of jobs that we can make into strong, good jobs that help people take care of their families.
Yep. So where do you go from here? I know you had this big event. Where does this organizing go from here?
Well, we just got started here in St. Louis, which is kind of, it's amazing how quickly this has moved in our community. I know that there were large efforts in New York and Chicago, which is fantastic, but those are very large communities, and those were outstanding efforts. But we've really been here in St. Louis for a short period of time in terms of workers actually standing up, but they have moved very rapidly to organize themselves and to build power. And they've created their own groups, St. Louis Organizing Committee, and they're moving very quickly. And one of the things that's going on in St. Louis that's, I think, very promising is that there are many, many community organizations, as you mentioned, coming to the fore to stand united with these workers. I'm a Lutheran minister myself, and we have over 50 clergy that have confirmed participation in walking workers back to their jobs, which is, you know, in a very short time, it means that there is tremendous energy in St. Louis, and I feel that energy will also be felt across the nation.
Yeah, I mean, it falls right into line, Reverend, with what I believe. You change your community, you make your backyard better, and others are going to come along.
Well, this is when we call this campaign STL 735, Can't Survive on 735, and the focus is St. Louis. What fast food workers are doing is not just something for themselves or families. It's also for our entire community. When they win, we're all going to win.
Yep. I'm right there with you. So what can we do to help? What's the because I think we should be doing it in every community. I'd love to see that start up right here in our backyard.
Well, I believe that it will be happening in many communities, because I know that our fast food workers here in St. Louis were extremely inspired by what went on in New York, Fast Food Forward, stuff there. In Chicago, in fact, our workers had an opportunity to participate in some of the Chicago effort, and that really allowed them to solidify their efforts to unite themselves and to begin a process here in St. Louis. So, you know, we got started in March. Workers started coming together in March, and now here it is, first part of May, and they are ready to make their voice heard. That's amazing.
It is amazing. And, you know, I look at these strikes that we've seen in Chicago and New York and now St. Louis, and I've always said, you know, the power that workers have is the power of folding their arms and saying, no, we're not going to create wealth for you until we get a fair share in this, until we got our bread as well. And I go back to the bread and roses strike where they said, bread, yes, we want to feed ourselves, but roses too, because we want to have a little bit something extra to help support our family. And this falls right in line with that.
Yes.
And if you want to know more about what's going on, stlouis735.org, the website, we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Reverend Martin Raffanen's name. It'll take you right there. Reverend, I appreciate the time. Keep up the fight, and we'd love to talk to you again as this moves forward.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
I want to start. When the kids are united, they can never be defeated.
con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hide and seek can be a fun game for kids, but when huge corporations play it in our elections, fun becomes infuriating. Last year, corporate interests sought to elect their candidates by hiding from voters. In all, $352 million in dark money was spent, the bulk of it by corporations that secretly pumped it into trade associations, social welfare charities, and other front groups run by the likes of Karl Rove, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and the Koch brothers. Since surreptitious electioneering puts a fatal curse on democracy, there's now a push in the Securities and Exchange Commission for a rule requiring corporate executives to reveal to their owners, i.e. their shareholders, any political donations they make with company money. How sensible! But this simple proposal has caused a fury among those who profit by playing political hide-and-seek from voters. CEOs of the 200 largest corporations are being rallied to the barricades to stop it, and House Republicans are even trying to make it illegal for the SEC to let shareholders and the voting public know which campaigns are being backed by cash from which corporations. Their rabid panic over a little sunlight reveals just how powerful dark money is. Ironically, the Supreme Court's chief assumption in allowing unlimited corporate cash into our democratic process was that shareholders would be informed, involved, and provide public accountability for their company's political spending. This is Jim Hightower saying, even Justice Antonin Scalia, a cheerleader for corporate politicking, is no fan of hiding one's electioneering efforts from voters. Requiring people to stand up in public for their political acts fosters civic courage, he says. A campaign hidden from public scrutiny, Scalia writes, is anathema to self-governance. He adds that campaigning anonymously, quote, does not resemble the home of the brave.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org. At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Bobby sent me an email, Bobby with an I. She writes, thanks for pointing out the post office does good deeds. Any good deeds are overlooked. She says, I did find it funny that the spokesperson, their first response was the postal carrier was not going to get in trouble. He should have lauded him as a wonderful public servant that he is, but instead chose to say he wouldn't be disciplined. Shows management's mindset. Keep up the great work. Love you, and thank you for listening, and thanks for the email. Yeah, I mean, yesterday, Pat, I talked up in New Hampshire. A Saturday delivery, postal carrier was on his route, saw a fire in a building, ran in to, you know, try and, you know, save somebody. A little smoke inhalation, you know. He got a little treatment, back to his truck, back to his route. Got to go back to work.
Absolutely gotta, wonderful. Yeah.
What was that saying? Through the rain, sleet, snow, and now smoke inhalation.
And fire jumping, yeah.
And here you've got a Republican Congress who's hell-bent on destruction of the post office, because if they got their way and Saturday delivery was done away with, no Saturday, no postal guy there to rush into the building.
what they really want to do is there's so much money in the post office that they absolutely want to get their hands on that to privatize it.
Absolutely.
So they have to make it look like there's no money. And a friend of mine, Senator Susan Collins, joined up with a half-man, half-slug named Lieberman.
Trader Joe!
And they came up with a plan to make it look like the post office was broke, which the only way they could do that was to sequester 75 years worth of benefits. That's how cash fat the post office is. And because the poor, like Tom said, the caller earlier, the poor person that's living in the country right now is so busy with their two or three jobs and their kid's soccer game, if they can make it there without getting fired, and everything else that's going on, they don't have time to learn about this vicious plot, which is exactly what it was.
Yeah, and speaking of getting fired, there were 15 workers, according to NBC Los Angeles, who left. They left the fields where they were picking strawberries because there was a fire and smoke had filled the area. They left to go breathe air. When they returned the next day, they were all fired. So 15 of them, heaven forbid that you leave. And I guess, you know, people say, well, at least we're not Bangladesh, which today another garment factory fire killed 8 people. So you throw that on top of the collapse that happened not too long ago, 780 people killed. You throw that onto the last couple of fires that have killed hundreds now.
At least it's not Bangladesh. Okay, why can't we do that with the big CEOs when they can make, say, 50 times as much as the employee? Or even 100 times as much. And then when they say, but I was making 1,800 times as much, well, you can say, well, at least you're not in Bangladesh. Why can't we use that?
I agree. There you go. Nice.
If it works on the poor slob, why doesn't it work on the...
Yeah, I watched the, you know, and our whole tour, the People's Tour for America, really came out of this History Channel series, The Men Who Made America Great, or Men Who Built America, or whatever the hell it is, where you're listening to the modern-day robber barons like Donald Trump tell me how wonderful the past robber barons like Carnegie is. And I started thinking about this in those terms. You know, you've got these people who they've never laid a brick or done any actual work. Hardest things work most of them done is coming through the birth canal. And
having been there, a little more work done by the mama.
Which is why, you know, I give my wife the, well, had I been the one on, there'd have been one child. That'd have been it. There would not have been 2 and 3. That'd have been the end of it. But even still, you know, but I look at this and, you know, comparing Bangladesh and China, Eric, us, you know, you've got people saying, well, you know, we're superior to that. Yet I look at this new analysis of data of the Bureau of Labor Statistics that pointed out in 2011, 4,693 workers were killed on the job. That's an average of 13 people each and every day in this country killed. That's not the occupational illnesses that kill people at the rate of about 50,000 per year, because we don't keep track of that, Pat. We don't want to know the cancers, and we don't want to know
the black lung.
We don't want to know any of that stuff, because we can't, heaven forbid, we keep track of that. Because then we might want to have safe workplaces, which is why, while we're on the tour, the People's Tour for America.com, if you want to see where we're going, we're going to go to West Texas to see the 93-foot crater of the explosion, because, well, you know, just can't have regulation in Texas.
You know, that just reminds me of something that frosted my cookies today. And trust me, they're big cookies.
No. I'm not going there with you.
Did you see Rumsfeld's new vacation home? I spit on myself just now. I apologize. It's not very unsightly.
Yeah, well, hey, Rummy did really well from the defense contractors. And if anybody, and my listeners have read Smedley Butler's War as a Racket, he's the guy who benefited from it.
I love Smedley Butler. But no, did you see what it is, though? It's the slave house. He has purchased the slave house where Frederick Douglass and a whole pile of other slaves were sent to get whipped into shape, literally. There's a slave, the I can't remember the name of it anymore. I'm spitting.
And you have a problem with that?
That should be that. Talk about public domain. That should be eminent domain, taken away from Rumsfeld and made into a Holocaust museum, because slavery in this country was a Holocaust. And he's living in it, and he's having parties. He's having lavish parties in rooms where they whipped
and
you know who's serving him? Tortured. Who?
Modern day slaves.
Yes.
Low wage workers.
I
got your speeches, don't
I? Yes. You do.
The more things change.
The Rick Smith Show, fabulous place.
The more they stay the same.
I really can't. And first of all, the guy's such a racist to even purchase it. Second of all, he's a racist to keep it and turn it into a holiday retreat. And then thirdly, it literally should be a museum so that we remember the things we've done. And then maybe, and that's another thing about this tour we're going on, we remember the things we've done, and we remember not only the good things that labor have done for us, but the horrible things that brought it about.
Yep. No.
You know, people didn't organize because life was all rosy and everybody was giving them a whole pile of food and clothes. And
wages, hours, conditions. So it's always been about.
And so we're going to remember that, and we're going to remind people of it, and not just your three kids, anyone who tags along with us.
Yep.
And I'll be writing.
We're looking forward to it, and we're going to come out with a couple of books, and we're going to do a whole bunch of stuff. The People's Tour for America.com is where you can go to check up where we're going, and the official launch will be on Monday. Expect some really good stuff along the way. But let me ask you this, you know, in looking at workers' rights, and we saw the story in California, the strawberry workers fired for leaving from the fire. They should have just stayed there and burned. That would have been much better. There was a woman fired.
Shortcake.
There is that. There was a woman in Tennessee, a woman named Christy Rifkin, who was fired. You know, the whole family values thing? You know how much we love children?
Mm-hmm.
Family values people. I almost can't say this. The T-Mobile company fired this woman who's pregnant because she used the bathroom.
Wow.
And you know what? And you want to hear the great part of this?
Start peeing right where they stand.
You know the great part of this? There are no laws that say that they can't. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Glenn on line one. How you doing tonight, Glenn?
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
First of all, I wanted to tell you how much I admire what you and Pat are talking about. I have chatted with Pat several times about several different things, and I realized tonight she was talking about me, because when she mentioned the 1% getting the 34,000 a year people to fight with the 15,000 a year people, I said, well, hey, that's me. She's talking about me. And I wanted to expound on that a little bit if I could.
Sure, hit me, because she's got a confused look on her face.
a little while back, I made a comment to Pat on chat about singing to the choir, and she responded with, how do I get people to sit at the table? That's the problem. And this, her comment about the 34,000 and the 15,000 a year people got me thinking about this. First of all, you just need to tell them, why don't you come sit at the table? And that's not as easy as it sounds. But my thought is that there's a lot of terminology and rhetoric that I use when I talk to people in the Green Party and Occupy Tampa and that sort of thing, that I have to realize I have to push it aside. My next door neighbor doesn't want to hear about, they don't want to hear me railing against Obama or Boehner, because they hear enough of them railing against each other.
Right.
Okay, what they want to hear is this whole thing about getting the infighting going on between people in the middle and lower classes. That's a mass mentality thing, and that has to be broken down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Jay Gould said it best. I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. And what we're seeing, that divide and conquer, we've been sliced and diced and pitted against each other. And I like your table piece there, because the reality is if we're not sitting at the table, we're probably on the menu.
That's very right. That's very right. That's very right. I'm a veteran, okay, to begin with, and I've experienced myself. There's a lot of resentment in this country. I don't know about how much. About veterans that get preferred jobs, they get free medical care, which I do. Okay, they get their college education paid if they take advantage of that.
But hold on. You know, the reality is, you know, we should be doing that for everyone. But thank you for your service.
Yeah.
And you're right. We give veterans things for a reason. But for me, it's not taking from you. It should be expanding for all.
Oh, I understand that. That my point there, and I do have a little bit of a guilt complex because of that, but not much. My point there is when somebody says something about that WIC lady in front of me or that veteran that lives next door, okay, that's the mass mentality. And you can just come right back and say, how many, do you know any veterans personally? Oh, yeah, my brother's a veteran, but that's different. And you got to tell them, no, it's not different. Or my daughter is on WIC, but it's only temporary. Well, it's temporary for all of them.
Yep.
You know, and instead of, you know, and that's a habit I'm trying to get into. Instead of railing against the powers that be, I relate in some way or try to. How about health care? You know, what would happen to you personally, you, Jim, or Bob or whoever, or Mary, if you got so sick you ended up in ICU? Well, I'd lose my apartment, blah, 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 you know. But that's kind of my point, was that is that the rhetoric that is used between people that already agree with what you're saying has to be put aside.
There's a theory that we have the lowest class to keep the lower classes in line. That as long as there's somebody working at a fast food joint and living in a homeless shelter, you can get the guy who's actually made it to $9.50 an hour at Walmart to keep going to work, because at least he's not making $7.15 or $7.25 at McDonald's. And so you've got this lowest class that keeps all the other lower classes in line, and hating each other is part of that.
Yep.
But it's the like, okay, I'm low, but I'm not that low yet, and I haven't fallen yet.
And the other part of it, Pat, is I'm going to be Bill Gates. One day I'm going to win the lottery.
Well, actually, you know, my thought is whether you make $34,000 a year or $15,000 a year, and I make less than that even, but I get by. But the thing is you got to realize, people have got to understand that they're the same people, that they just are the same people, that when you shake somebody's hand and you say good morning, it's the same person, that whether or not, you know, they're not the people that need, or, you know, the 1% aren't the people that need the help. We need to help each other, and we need to understand each other, and that's the table that we need to sit at. And that's just really nothing more than a good smile and say, have a seat, you know.
And the other thing is, if you do meet that person who you're pretty sure is on drugs, or you do meet that person who you're pretty sure is just going to, whatever they get is going to go, you know, right up their nose or whatever it is, if you do meet that person, that percentage of waste is so infinitesimally small compared to the number of people that are helped by a similar program. But when you turn around and you see the amount of waste on Wall Street, and you see the amount of waste in bailing out those banks, and you see the amount of waste, it's the lion's share that's wasted. And so what they get us to do somehow, our 34,000s to our 15,000s, is they get us to pick on the one half of 1% that's in abuse, and somehow sneak by us the 90% that's in abuse at the top.
That's because we see each other. We don't see them. And that's the point.
We can't even imagine them.
Exactly.
that's the thing. I don't know how an airplane can fly either, but you know, that's the thing. I'll still get, well, yeah, so why? They have pressure over the top wing. They still can't leave, you know, lift hundreds of tons of metal in here. But hey, trust me, at the end of the year, when the UN puts out their reports blasting America for our civil rights violations against our own people, then the people that are sitting at the table are going to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, this ain't right.
Absolutely.
And
I honestly think the end of the year is going to, you know, that is going to make a difference. How big, but I don't think it's going to be ignored.
Well, I appreciate the call, Glenn. Thanks so much for your thoughts.
Sure, and thank you.
And I'll leave you with one thought, because, you know, the reality is, while we were in New York for a conference recently, I happened down to Wall Street, since you brought it up, to look at the bull. Do you know the bull has his own cop?
What?
The bull has his own police protection 24 hours a day, because the symbol of Wall Street, well, we don't want to have anyone write anything on the bull. The bull, sacrosanct. Those poor people in those poor communities with the violence, no, the bull, more important.
Someone ought to castrate that bull.
Good point.
That is unattractive.
I'm right there with you. Quick break, right back with Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Special.
Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
So today the House Oversight Committee had a hearing on what's going on and what happened in Benghazi, and I found it very interesting that Fox News decided that Oliver North would be the guy to talk about cover-ups, that Ali would be the guy, the expert analyst to talk about cover-ups. And I wondered, how much of that experience he had during Iran-Contra he brought to the table. Just a thought. Anyway, here to find out what's going on around the world and in Washington, D.C., I've got Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, what's going on?
Thank you very much. Well, yes, Benghazi hearing was going on today, and I don't know how much new we learned. We got a lot of emotion. We got a lot of allegations, but you didn't get any refutation.
Yeah.
So it was a purely one-sided hearing.
Well, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it's... in my view, it's one of those things. We're going to smear the administration, and on the other side, try and smear Hillary Clinton as well.
Yeah, I think both of those things. I think that's both of those things were going on. I mean, I do think the administration's got some problems with the talking points. But I think that as long as the talking points are what is focused on, I actually think that they're missing possibly are more important aspects to this, but that seems to be what they're obsessed with is the talking point.
No, so, I mean, for me, the resources. How is it?
Yeah, the resources is the issue.
That's the issue to me. It's now something that I haven't heard much talk about, and I know that there's been a little bit of resource move, but not in my view enough to make this right. So what
I've hammered about this. I've hammered both about resources in terms of embassy security, but also resources in terms of where was the military? Where was the military positioned around the world? Were the various bits of the military in the right places that night for September the 11th?
Yeah.
Knowing what they knew about the Middle East, was everybody in the right position? I don't know the answer to that, but from what I've heard so far, I'm not sure that they were, and I don't hear enough focus on that. I think that's legitimate.
I agree. And maybe when Obama makes his library, there'll be an interactive for you make the decision there, like at the Bush Library.
There you go.
Which I cannot wait to go and try once I get to the...
You're so excited. I don't know what to do about you. You bring this up every time we talk.
I think it's important. I think this is going to be a fun trip. I think it's going to be educational. And I think taking the Look and Find book to the Bush Library will be something very constructive and maybe instructional for the next president and for future generations.
Indeed.
Or maybe not. I see some lawmakers not happy over sexual assault numbers that released yesterday. As you know, I wouldn't expect that they would be happy, but what are they doing?
It was a confluence of things. I mean, there was the Pentagon report that came out that said the sexual assault numbers, this is based on anonymous surveys, had gone up to 26,000 last year, from 19,000 the year before. So it's getting worse. It's not getting better. Also, then things were compounded by the chief officer who is in charge of sexual prevention being arrested in Arlington, Virginia over the weekend for drunkenly groping a complete stranger's breasts and buttocks in a parking lot.
Yeah, you can't make that up.
You can't.
And you go, it's typical. I mean, to me, no surprise there whatsoever.
And then it was made even worse when a female general, an astronaut, overturned, and this is the second time there's been a high-profile one of these recently, overturned a sexual assault conviction, a serious sexual assault conviction, with absolutely no explanation. And that, of course, sent Senator Claire McCaskill absolutely ballistic.
As it should.
But, you know, as it should.
But, you know, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, as we're, that's the culture in my view, though. I mean, that's what the military culture has been. It's what's going to have to be fixed. I mean, you talk about a war culture. This is what you get out of it. And I just saw a report the other day that, the number of fatal accidents, with military people has gone through the roof because of that war mentality.
Wow, that's extraordinary.
Because, you know, the way they were driving there, not so good here. Just
right. Things don't necessarily translate.
Yeah. I also see the Republicans working to derail Obama's cabinet picks. And I got to be honest, I don't want Penny Pritzker either. I don't want the trade representative either.
They're not the ones that they're going after right now.
The ones that I want done, they won't go after.
Well, they will. No, Charles Grassley is going to go after Penny Pritzker hard. He's going to go after her offshore money. He's really going to go after her. But right now they're going after Thomas Perez, who's the Labor pick.
Of course they will.
There was supposed to be a vote on him today in the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee set for 4 p.m., and then suddenly... Senator Tom Harkin, who's the chair, Democrat of Iowa, announced that it was going to be delayed because Republicans invoked this Senate rule preventing committees from meeting for more than 2 hours after the Senate is gaveled in on a given day. And this was after the Republicans asked to extend the length of time of the meeting.
You just can't make that up either.
But I find it up.
I find it funny, though, that Grassley's going to go after Pritzker for offshore money. Where was he in 2012? Because I seem to remember a presidential candidate who had a ton of money somewhere else. What was his name? Yeah, there was a guy. He was running for president, had tons of money offshore, had fairly low tax rate because of all the loopholes and stuff.
Guy.
And a tax return that he didn't show us. Remember him?
The guy with the elevator in his garage.
That's him. Yeah, where was Grassley then? I'm not sticking up for Pritzker because I think they're all in the same vein. But you know, where was he then?
I think that's different.
Okay. Because she has a D. Because she's been nominated by a Democrat. Well, a Democrat in name.
I think so.
All right. Good.
The other one they're trying to derail is the EPA pick, Environmental Protection Agency, Gina McCarthy. Now, she's about to have a hearing, and normally senators submit questions, you know.
Right.
And they tried to derail Obama's first EPA administrator, Lisa Jackson. She got 157 per pre-confirmation queries. Okay, so then Democrats back in the day, they gave EPA Chief Michael Levitt 283 questions for the record. Okay. Senator David Vitter, Louisiana Republican, who's got some pretty close ties to the oil and gas industries.
Yeah, Diaper Dave.
Has already sent 653 questions to Gina McCarthy.
I only have one question for Dave.
I have several, and I can't say any of
Huggies,
them on the air.
Huggies or Pampers?
I can't say any of my questions on the air.
And nor should you. Well, actually, I wish we could, but, it's one of those things. I think the Republicans, even if you put up Rex Tillerson to be the guy who was the head of the EPA, you wouldn't get the Republicans to stand up and vote for it anyway.
What about Jeffrey Skilling?
There you go. Who's getting out of jail early, I guess?
He's getting out of jail. He's knocking 10 years off his sentence. He could head the EPA now.
There you go. All right. Why don't we put him in charge of our pension system? Put him in charge of Social Security.
There you go.
Nice. Or the post office. How about let's put him in charge of the post office, which I understand there was a memo advising against ending Saturday delivery.
Yes. The Postal Service got an outside law firm they hired, and it warned them that they risk being removed from office if they went ahead with their plan to end mail delivery on Saturdays. And the memo also said that they faced a lot of obstacles in implementing their plans, including legal challenges from the director of the GAO and lawsuits coming from opponents of the plan around the country. And the document said to the agency it should, quote, tread carefully in the highly controversial area of potential open disobedience of a federal statute.
Yeah, well, we've got ideology on our side, Victoria, and that legal stuff, all that law stuff, that doesn't matter because they've got ideology, and that's all that really matters because they believe.
Well, at the moment, still got six-day delivery.
Yeah, and fortunately up in New Hampshire where a postal worker went into a burning building to save people, no Saturday delivery, no Saturday postman. Nobody running into the building. What I find interesting about that is the spokesman for the post office up there said that he wouldn't be disciplined for his other mail being late. I found that just to be, here the guy ran into the building, treated for smoke inhalation, gets away from the ambulance, tells the ambulance driver and the press, hey, I can't talk to you, got to get back to my route. And the spokesman, the only thing he can say is, not good job, no, not what a hero, none of that. Well, we're not going to discipline him.
There are people like that.
And those are the people that are running the post office. And finally, the GAO says that there are a number of errors in the death master file. What's that about?
Yeah, who knew there was a death master file? But there is. It's federal, and it's made up of nearly 100 million records of dead people with Social Security numbers. The GAO's done a study of it, of course. They say it's fraught with thousands of errors. And what it means is that the Social Security Administration is probably paying benefits to dead people. They found things like almost 1,300 records of people whose recorded age of death was between 111 and 129.
Nice. It's those outdated computers.
Nearly 1,800 records showing people who got Social Security numbers before the government began using them. And then in 130 cases, they got people listed as dying before they were born.
Good. So is that people, are those people changing their identities? I mean, are we sending checks out to these people and they're being cashed, or they just go into the grave?
Well, some of these people are still doing the study, but some of these people are getting checks. But Senator Tom Carper said at the hearing today, making payments to people who are dead, it drives me crazy. But payments are being made to dead people. On the other hand, there are people in the dead master file who aren't dead.
Nice. And what are they? Why are they there?
They get names and numbers mixed up.
Okay. Maybe we need photo ID then.
You'll bring out a libertarian streak in me in a minute.
Well, I mean, that's what we're doing with voters and the insanity that goes along with that. Well, good. I mean, at least maybe we're going to fix it.
Yes, they're going to fix it. Their investigation hasn't finished, and they're going to have some recommendations later this year for how to improve the system.
There you go. My first thought was, I guess you can't take it with you. So there you go. Victoria, always great talking with you.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Earth, sky.
Data from NASA's Cassini mission to Saturn.
is giving space scientists a clearer picture of seasonal changes on Titan, Saturn's large moon.
NASA scientists released images showing change in Titan's atmosphere during and after Titan's 2009 equinox. An equinox for Earth or any planet or moon occurs when the sun appears over that world's equator at local noon. It's a seasonal marker. Scientists say the change in seasons on Titan before and after this equinox involved a wholesale reversal at unexpected altitudes in the circulation of Titan's atmosphere.
The Cassini spacecraft arrived at Saturn in 2004 when it was winter in Titan's northern hemisphere. The north pole of Titan was seen to have a hood of dense, gaseous haze and a high-altitude hotspot. There was a vortex above Titan's north pole.
And then the season changed. The North Pole vortex and observed hotspot almost disappeared. Meanwhile, similar features developed at Titan's South Pole, for example, a South Pole vortex. Those features are still present today.
Scientists are watching Titan's South Pole vortex build up. They'll keep watching thanks to Cassini, which is still orbiting around Saturn and its moons. For more, come to EarthSky.org and search for the word Titan. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
As far as my 2008 compensation goes, it was for my work in 2008. I do believe that it was comparable to compensation for people in positions like mine in the industry.
Could you tell us how much money you made in 2008 before you got the bonus?
My base salary, I believe, was $350,000.
I don't really know. I was just chump change considering I got $1 million bonus.
You know, when you're making $1,000 a day, the stuff's just coming in so fast.
Jack Lew, where were the Republicans when we needed them to block that nomination? Going to go after Perez in the labor as labor secretary? Are you kidding me?
How about that chick who's worth $1.8
billion? Penny? You don't like Penny?
Penny? That's her name? Penny. What an oxymoron! A woman worth $1.8 billion is named Penny.
Here again, you know, the old-fashioned way. Made the money the old-fashioned way. And not like the guy in the commercial. She didn't earn it. She inherited it. Much like the guy in West Virginia.
Wow, she did it a lot of times. Not that old-fashioned way.
Oh, not nice. But, you know, there's going to be, she'll sail through.
She will.
There'll be people who say, we're going to put up a fake. She's one of the, in fact, she's in that part of the 1% that looks down on the other part of the 1%. Mm-hmm. Which is funny because I have an uncle who's really well-to-do, and they live in this really exclusive gated community on the Hanna Estate in Cleveland. And it was funny listening to them talk when last time I was there, because the new neighbors that moved in, they're snobby. Because, they're in a different, in that 1%, they're in that different strata. And I find it interesting that they even divide themselves.
Well, my family were all Irish immigrants, and at least on my mother's side. And my Aunt Martha, who had an incredible brogue, she would talk about the fact that the Reagans were new wealth, and how low class they were because they were new wealth. Because she was a servant in the homes of some of the oldest money. And when Princess Di and Chucky got married, I don't know if you remember, but Nancy Reagan gave them a Ming vase, and the vase had a crack in it. And because it was cracked, she got a good price for it. And my Aunt Martha, who didn't have a pot to do anything in or a window to throw it out of, was sitting there watching the wedding on TV saying, a broken ball. She gave her a broken ball. How can we even hold our heads up? This is the royalty of the United States giving a broken ball to the royalty of the United Kingdom. And she was horrified. The low class, new rich. And that's the way it's looked at, the new rich versus the old rich.
And to me, I'd go, you've got enough. You can buy your own damn bowl.
Really? And what do you think they even paid attention to what they got from the Reagans? Would you?
No.
Yeah, no. Chesterfields. That's what he should be giving people. Or
You can explain that because I think most people missed it. Mr. Smock and not a cough in a carton load.
Yeah. Well, and Ronald Reagan sold everything. That's a great book, The Man Who Sold Everything. Ronald Reagan sold absolutely everything. So when he got to be president, it was open door, you know, revolving door for everybody who had a special interest. And one of my favorite horrible stories about Ronald Reagan was Rye syndrome was discovered in young people. And Bayer aspirin went to Ronald Reagan and had it buried in the FDA. And by the time it came back out of the FDA and saw the light of day, 1,800 children had died of Rye syndrome, which, of course, is caused by giving aspirin to small children. And those are 1,800 children's lives, deaths.
That's only 1,800. You know, 11,300 die on the first day of life here in the U.S.
I know.
Do you think they give a rat's behind about the 11,000 or the 1,800, for that matter? It's all about rhetoric.
No, until Dick Van Dyke's granddaughter becomes one of them. And that's what blew it open. And that's the sort of thing is that we have to, I have this plan that we're just going to do random sampling of Congress and we're going to hold them accountable to the same percentages as the rest of the people. I don't want to take away all their health care. I just want to take away health care from 12% of them. And then just draw the names out of a hat. You want to get your health care back? Lower the percentage. Maybe you'll be one of the lucky ones. You won't have to come out of the hat next time.
But here's
3%
the problem
of the
with
country
that.
Doesn't have a home?
That's a good, it's a good idea, but here's the problem. We've got the Millionaires Club there in Congress.
And they're never going to vote for that sort of thing.
Well, it doesn't matter. They could easily, out of their pocket, afford to pay for it, even if we're not.
Oh, no. They're not allowed.
Oh, not allowed.
They are not allowed to have a home.
Oh, wow.
They are not allowed to. You know, all those forces that come to bear on the average person, they're just going to come to bear on them. They're just not allowed. And if they get a home, they have to give up their job. All right, it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy.
I'll go there with you.
You know what another fantasy is?
Hit me.
Me getting an outfit at Abercrombie & Fitch.
Really?
Yeah, you know why?
Tell me.
They finally have admitted they don't make extra large or double extra large clothes because they don't want fat girls wearing them.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't even, I'm not a fashionista, so what's the big deal with Abercrombie & Fitch?
It's a big deal.
It is.
It's a big deal. But they say they want cool kids to wear their clothes. Fat kids aren't cool.
Wow.
You know, at the rate young kids are getting fat in this country, Abercrombie & Fitch is really exiting themselves out of the market. Or not exiting them. Just to
So we need the rim shot for that. So there you go. Sorry. Good.
Yeah. I can't believe it's unabashed, though. Unapologetic here.
Look, I mean, you know, the things that they've been whispering to each other for years, finally being able to say, look, you know, we don't care if people don't have health care. We don't care if those low-wage workers make peanuts. I mean, nothing.
We don't like fat people.
Nothing's surprising me anymore. Nothing surprises me.
Yeah.
These people are, well, they are what they are. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. Stitcher on your smartphone. Take the program on the go if you've missed any portion of the program. Tomorrow, you'll be sitting in all by yourself.
I know. It's exciting. Call in. Tune in tomorrow. Call in. Keep me company.
And, of course, as always, you can email you at pat@therickSmithShow.com.
Mm-hmm.
Simple stuff.
Thanks for the email address, too.
Yeah, it works.
It's pretty exciting.
But I appreciate you coming and sitting with me today, and I look forward to the next month or so as we embark on this wonderful journey.
Well, I want to tell you I'm extremely excited about the journey. I'm happy. I get to write this story. We're going to have books coming out. I get to hang out with you. I get to hang out with your fabulous kids. I get to hang out with Brett, the silent but genius one over here. He's the guy that makes...
And he will have pants on.
I was wondering, does he ever wear...
We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the moon's sway.